sequence.
November 13, 2014,
FPOM. Derek Faber
has joined the conference.
Carl Duggar, McNary Dam
has joined the conference.
Sherry Beard
has joined the conference.
Ann Sutter
has joined the conference. A participant has joined the conference. A participant has joined the conference. Has joined the conference. A participant has joined the conference.
Morty
has joined the conference. Has joined the conference. Conference.
Ann Sutter
has left the conference. A participant has joined the conference.
Good morning, everyone.
Morning, Tammy. How's the snow in Portland?
A participant has joined the conference.
Enough to cause widespread panic.
Have snow there already?
A little bit, yeah.
Oh boy. Supposed to get here between 10 and 11 today at McNary.
It's hitting the gorge now.
Yeah.
Chris Penny
has joined the conference. A participant has joined the conference.
Ben Houston
has joined the conference.
But to type or not to type, that's the question.
A participant has joined the conference.
Hello, this is Tom Lewis. I see you all did decide not to come to my office since no one's here.
We can hear the echoes from here, Tom.
Yeah, it's quite delightful. I've got full confidence in myself. I'm setting up a shuffleboard even as we speak.
Is it true you have a portable wet bar there?
Only on certain occasions. I gotta make sure the executive director's not in on those days.
Yeah.
Did you bring any treats for yourself?
Fuckingly enough, I did. And you don't get any. Is it much worse on the east side? Because it is once again the classic Portland snow apocalypse where Peter Wolf is at the weather helm, I see.
There's no snow at McNary yet. It's supposed to start between 10 and 11 today.
There's snow in Washougal.
Are you sure that's not goose dumpings or something like that?
Right, and yeah, by snow I mean those tiny little flakes that you can barely see.
Yeah.
Northwest is as pathetic as your side. There's nothing over here. Snowpocalypse hasn't hit yet, but we're all eagerly waiting.
Has joined the conference.
Yeah, I especially love the Portland Public School District. Getting on top of things like always.
So. Yes.
Doug, are you going to talk to the Bonneville situation?
No, I was going to be quiet because Tammy's on the phone and trying to keep my mouth shut or I get in trouble, so she's... I think Lisa's on too, so this should be able to try to stay out of trouble.
Ben is on, so he can...
Yeah, I'm here.
Do all jammer.
All right, so I heard Anne left the conference. Oh, you're back?
Sounds like we have quite a few people, too, so maybe we should consider starting the meeting now that Tom's told us he's sitting by himself, which, you know, if he could have guaranteed that he was going to be there, you know, maybe we would have made an effort to come down, but...
Well, Paco's got me scared, so...
I know, and that as a result, it was like a domino effect, you know? Tammy initiated, well, we're supposed to get this. I'm like, well, do we know if we could get in the building if you get it?
Has joined the conference.
So anyway, I think it's, I don't know. I guess we'll wait and see by the afternoon what you have, whether or not it was a good decision that we all bailed, but...
Look at Greg. He went all the way to the bottom and turned around.
I haven't looked at the weather conditions, but what are you getting down there and over on the east side besides cold?
You know, though, last year when Portland got snow, it took me 3 hours just to get to the river from downtown. So in light of that, it seemed prudent to err on the side of caution.
Right now, it's got 20 degrees Fahrenheit, and like I say, snow is expected between 10 and 11 p.m.
Wow, I didn't realize you were expecting snow in that time.
Oh, yeah. 80% chance today.
Olivia's just cold.
it's cold, so... I don't know. Maybe we should, I guess, let's... Can we get organized, I guess?
Roll call and see who's on, see if Frederick has power or not yet.
Yeah, was that the issue yesterday? He has sent an email this morning to John in response to the McNary shutdown, so he was somewhere near power. So, yeah, let's go around. Thanks, everybody, for joining. Sorry that you're alone at this point, Tom. Appreciate you having the room. And let maybe find out who all is on so that we can go ahead and get going.
So, if you don't mind, I'd like to run through the alphabetical list I have so that I make sure I catch everyone. And if you're on, just say whatever here. All right, Doug, Baus.
Here.
Cordy.
Here.
Dalen. Duggar.
Here.
Faber. I know Derek's on, I heard him. Fredericks. Hausman. I thought I heard Ben. Tom.
Yeah, I did too.
I'm here, how are you?
Yeah, so you gotta unmute it so I can hear. Tom Iverson. Russ Kiefer. Catherine Costow. Lors. Agnes Lute. Me. Greg Moody. Charles Morrill. Christine Peterson. Chris Pinney. Chris, I know you're on. Rarisich. Sherry Sears.
Here.
Anne. Robert Stansel. Bob Wertheimer.
Here.
Dave Wills? Lisa Wright?
Yeah.
Zorich?
Yeah, I'm here, Danny.
Excellent. And Zindal? All right, so now if there are people I didn't call.
The conference.
I didn't hear my name called, Sean Bailey.
Great.
Fine either, Tammy and Trevor. I just got on. It's Gary.
Excellent. Thanks.
Hey, Tammy, you're going to want to add Joe Skalicki for U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. He's going to take over Dave Wills when he takes off here in the sunset in about a month or so.
Yeah, he's on my distribution list.
Cool.
A participant has joined the conference.
Who else just joined?
So this is Ida Royer from Bonneville.
Good morning. We're about to get started. We just went through roll call of everybody that's on the line.
And good morning. Jason Williams on the line as well.
Thanks, Jason. So, first item is to approve the October FPAW minutes. Anybody have any concerns related to that? Okay, not hearing anything, Tammy. I think we're good there.
Excellent.
I think we want to ask, does anyone have any additional action items or updates that weren't on the agenda that we want to update at this point? I know Tammy mentioned that Portland had an additional update for Bonneville debris. Does anybody else have anything that wasn't on the agenda that they wanted to try to speak to today?
Anne, is the McNary dewatering issue on here, I guess, under maintenance?
It's down under, it's under, it should be under updates, and then the JBS shutdown is one of the NOCs that was out there, so we'll have an opportunity to speak to that.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Annie, is demanded temperature on our Chris Bitty on the line?
We could perhaps add that underneath Jason's Lower Granite and Lomo Unit 1 schedule update just for if Chris is on. When I don't know if he is, because when Tammy went around, he didn't say he was still on. Are you on, Chris? So I think we might... We can mention that when we get down under, I don't know, that's a coordination form that was out. Chris is up here walking around. So, we can do that. We can cover that under action items below Lower Granite and Lomo, and I'll go to speakerphone so that he can talk at that time. So why don't we go ahead and get started then, and did I give everybody a chance to add? Is there anybody else that had a comment? Okay.
I've joined the conference.
So the first action item was the Lomo PLC programming. Greg, I think you were going to just give an update. I know that we had a comment since the last meeting from Trevor inquiring schedule-wise where we were at, and did we have an updated when we were going to have this completed?
Yeah, this is for Trevor's comment. I did talk to Bill Spurgeon, and I talked to a lot of other people about this thing, but Bill is scheduled weekly meetings with the people that are programming this PLC. They are working on it. They did not have a meeting this past Tuesday, obviously, but the week before they did have a meeting, and they expect to have this thing back online and working by the end of February, is what I understood. They have a person that is programming this, that is now dedicating his time just to do the programming for the PLC to get this thing in operation. And so I felt a little bit better after talking to him yesterday morning about this, but he's going to provide weekly, he attends a weekly meeting for updating this thing, and he'll pass the information to us at the time.
Okay, well, yeah, I kind of want to continue to get some real
on this because in our weekly report, you know, ever since June or so, it's been saying that, you know, it's being programmed. It's being programmed every week.
Chris in conference room.
Has joined the conference.
You know, what is this, the HAL 9000? I mean,
well, it's a little worse than that, too, but I do, it is taking a long
time. Participants have joined the conference.
It's picked up very well from what I understand, and it does take a little bit of time to do this super owl.
Oh.
And, you know, it's going to be the same thing as Groot and Granite, too, when they get theirs replaced and redone, too, so that's
well,
coming
we
up.
What we do is that we get it done before next season, so.
I would think so. Bill would have a weekly update, and I told him maybe you might want to show that in the weekly report also. I mean, put down real time, Bill.
Okay, thank you.
You bet.
So, Tammy, this is Tom Morris for the notes. Some brave soldiers actually showed up for the first office. So we have Dave Wills,
Christine Peterson,
and Julie.
Yes.
There you go.
Julie who? Oh, Jumba?
Yeah.
Okay, I gotcha. Yeah.
Scott's replacement, when he retires. Oh, wait a minute, he's never going to retire.
And Scott said he was on the phone.
Oh, is he? He's calling from Chicago? What?
You know, Tammy, the only reason I came over to the meeting in person because I figured you'd be here with brownies.
I know, and I have two Tupperware containers full of really good treats sitting at my home.
Okay, thanks everybody. The next item under action items was a Lower Granite and Lomo Unit 1 return to Kaplan schedule update. Recall that we talked about this briefly back in April, May, and at that time we said we would come back once we had a schedule update. And so Jason Williams is on the call. He's the project manager. And at this point in time, Jason, were you going to just give a brief schedule update? There's just for your information, people have been interested in the Unit 1s getting the linkage repair done so that there would be flexibility to operate within the entire 1% range. And so that's why when it was discussed back earlier this year, they requested that as we got closer to a schedule and or a contract that we come back and give people an opportunity to comment.
Okay. Yeah, I can do it. On the, maybe start with the Lower Granite, you know, one linkage upgrade. The project is to repair the fixed blades, if you guys aren't aware of what the scope of work is on that. They had a failure, I think, 2 years back, and they had to fix the blades, weld them, block them. So what we're going to do is we're going to go in and return the Unit 1 back to the operating Kaplan. We've purchased the parts in advance, so that helps us minimize that window that we have to take the outage. So we're on track. We're ready to go. We're looking at a 10-month outage, and we'd like to take that outage September through September 2015 through July of 2016. And that gives us all the time we need to go in and replace all the parts that we've flagged. The only thing
have joined the conference.
The only risk, I guess, that we're tracking for this scheduled outage is right now Granite has a contract in place to rehab their bridge crane, and we need that bridge crane, that's the overhead crane, to unstack the unit. They've had some schedule slips, so right now we look like they should wrap up early July, and so we're just keeping our eye on that to make sure that that doesn't move any further to the right. And so we had a meeting yesterday with senior leadership here to talk to that, and they're figuring out how they can mitigate that risk and finish on time. But that's the only thing we have to keep in mind for the Lower Granite project. Otherwise, we're on schedule, we're ready to go, and we'd like to take that out in September 2015. If there's not any questions on Granite, I can brief the Lomo project.
So does anybody have any comments on that? I think that this is what Jason just identified is basically what was briefed before. However, remember when we briefed it before, there were some comments or concerns because at that point in time, we were thinking that as soon as they got the bridge crane completed in July, that they might be able to start the unstack of Unit 1. It sounds like at this point, the unstack would start in September, from what I just heard Jason relay.
Yeah, we would just say that, you know, the sooner the better on this to get, you know, for the steelhead passage occurring in the summer of 16. So if you could start a little sooner, we'd prefer that, but later. Mm-hmm.
Okay, understood. If we can finish that bridge crane contract, we're definitely in a position to start sooner with the contract award in April, so take down that note and let the team know. Okay.
Okay, sounds like you can probably move on to Lomo then.
Sure. So Lower Monumental is a little different. We have the Kaplan repair as well. They also had Unit 1 fail. But what we're also doing there is we're rewinding the unit. In addition, since we do have a long lead time before we can get into Unit 1, because we have to go ahead and have the winding manufactured, and that's about a 9-month lead time after contract award, we're going to go into Unit 2, and we're going to do some cavitation repair in Unit 2. And then as soon as the winding's available, we're going to take the outage on Unit 1. So we have two outage windows on the Lower Monumental project. The first one is Unit 2, and we're looking at June 2015 through January of 2016. And that it's about a 4 to 5 month duration to do that cavitation repair down. To get in there, they'll leave the unit in place, so they're going to go in and do the cavitation repair, then get out and bring the unit back online. And then we want to take an outage on Unit 1 immediately after, so January 2016 through November of 2016. And what we're going to do in there is we're going to unstack the entire unit, we're going to rewind the generator, and we're going to return to an operational Kaplan, return to Kaplan, just as we're doing at Lower Granite, and then we'll also do cavitation repair. So a little bit more work, so it's a longer duration. But January 2016 to November 2016 is what we're looking at for Unit 1.
Okay, so the big thing on that one is to ensure that we don't have both of those units out at the same time.
No. So we will not at any time. That's where we're going to do the Unit 2 while we're waiting for the winding on Unit 1. And we will not take Unit 1 offline until Unit 2 is back up and operational.
Okay.
Any other comments for Jason? Okay. Thank you, Jason.
Yeah, great. Thanks, guys.
Chris, are you on the phone?
Has left the conference.
Yeah, I'm on the phone now.
Okay, so it was suggested maybe we squeeze in an update on your MOC for Lower Granite temperature.
Okay. Yeah, it hasn't changed a whole lot yet. I'm looking at some specific summer Chinook stuff that Trevor suggested to try to get more specific numbers on those based on pit tags. I was getting ready to finish it up, and there was some internal discussion here at the district about some of the scheduling, and so I guess what we need is, yeah, some kind of a call from the region about this 6-day outage at 2-3 periods. We can't really come up with a backup plan in any detail right now because a lot of it's going to be what the contractor proposes, if he'd be able to do it or not. But if we can't come up with that, we're looking at contingencies to delay the construction till the next in-water work window. And then it's basically up to operations if the submerged pumps would be warranted for 2014 type operation or not. We're still kind of in the final phases of some analysis of how effective those were, because we did have some fish jumping and stuff,
And what we propose to do is, instead of having a diesel generator, to save some money if ops goes for it, would be to directly hook those pumps into an electrical, then into the existing pump's electrical system or something. So we need to get an electrical engineer to tell us. That came up last year, but we kind of ran out of time to implement, to check that out, to actually implement it. But that would save a lot of the headaches and the logistics of the project and stuff for running any emergency pumps in there, either if it's for backup or if it's for a delay and we think we're going to need it or not. But that's going to be kind of an operations call on that. So that's kind of the update. I'm looking at the Dr. Check's comments we got from NIMS I put in. I'll send those out. Basically, the construction stuff isn't a problem. There's answers to those construction questions about, you know, yeah, let's see, we'll get to this next one here. About the diameter transition and extension pipes and stuff. I mean, that's really no problem. I'll get these out to people so they really have a good idea of the first one here. Well, and one of them is up to a contractor, so we can't tell them how to install anything. We can kind of, you know, suggest and whatever we got in the plans. So putting in that extension pipe, you know, on the lip down there and stuff like that, it's kind of, we have to see how they propose it and okay it, but, you know, we're not going to let them do anything. You know, it ain't going to basically work, so.
So it seems like at the regional level, Chris, the issue is you receive comments from NIMS, you're going to address that and send it out to everyone. For the comments that Greg Moody has received from the various states and tribes, I know he's heard from Idaho, he's heard from Washington, you've heard from NIMS, we've also heard from Kritik and the Nez Perce. We're not under the understanding that there has been any agreement from Kritik or the Nez Perce for even the 3-day outage at this point in time.
Right, yeah, we don't have any confirmation of even the 3-day outage. It's kind of contingent that, you know, we can do it in a 3-day outage. We may only get half of it done in a 3-day outage and have to postpone till the wintertime anyway. What our concern is that the more we delay now, the fabrication time for the chimney, if they're late on that fabrication time for the chimney, then they're late on everything. We may not be able to do it in that 3-day outage anyway. So it might be better to get in the contract to go ahead and go for a delay till the next winter window when we know we'll have the time and we won't be rushing things, than to parse it out again.
So let's focus on you getting comments back out. At this point in time, you have a Fitterwig meeting next week where hopefully you will have your comments to the MOC addressed and back out. At this point in time, unless we hear differently, that project is continuing to move forward. However, they don't have the issue of everyone agreeing to a 3-day outage solved. So that is putting you potentially on a path to not be able to move forward with your install. However, we will assume that you continue to move forward with your contract process to try to be set up to do that should, after this comment period where you get these questions and answers back out to the region, anyone choose to change their mind.
Yeah.
But that said,
we know the contract out with an option of when to install. Basically, we want the contract out so we get what we need fabricated and on site in plenty of time if we do delay, or some confidence that we'll have it when we can go to the 3-day outage in June. So.
Okay, so I think for now that's probably a good update. Obviously,
Sorry to interrupt this, Russ.
Good.
good morning, all. Yeah, Chris, one of the things is that, you know, we're seeing a lot of fallback on sockeye as well as these passage delays. And there was interest in having us present fallback on sockeye at the TMT year in review. And I recommend we wait until next year because I was hoping that extending the existing auxiliary pumps and doing the cool water release in front of the ladder exit would not only help with our delay issue, but also with sockeye fallback, and we had analyzed it. I think we'd be okay here with doing the switching the diesel to electric pumps for the snorkel we had last year to run the trap. But if at all possible, I think we would be okay with that option. But I'd sure like to have that cool water released in front of the ladder instead of near the top of the ladder. So, is there any way we can move in that direction?
Well, yeah, it's going to be up to the operations to fund any emergency snorkel pumps anyway. But, okay. I mean, we're just trying to make it cheaper and better for them as kind of a backup. So, you know, we'll see how that develops, I guess. Moving them, we'll talk at Fitterwig about moving, you know, there is a new design for that spreader that puts water out into the forebay to cool that down. And what we're looking at right now is the 2014 operation and putting a 60 foot of water through diffuser 14 plus, you know, 30 foot of water into the ladder exit chamber. What was the effect of that? What kind of benefit did we really get? Did we really need that 60 foot of water to really, I mean, did we set up a different differential that we weren't really aware of that may add effects or something? I think it was water level turning the pumps on and off, but we could have had a different differential set up there because we had, you know, different depths of water coming into there. So we're looking into that operation to make an emergency thing, a backup system, you know, more effective. So, but at Fitterwig, we can definitely talk about also these comments and them sent in to me and others for, that I had to put in the doctor checks. We can address those at Fitterwig. I'll send them out before then, but we can address those are more structural type stuff. So,
all right.
So I thought you were going to finalize the MOC somehow, Chris. That's what's relevant to the FPOM forum was the MOC. Your Fitterwig stuff needs to stay in Fitterwig, but
you
don't have a finalized MOC at this point.
Right, yeah. And I'm not sure we ever will. So, but yeah, I'll take, you know, one more shot on the developing, what's developing and get it in there. We had some new stuff yesterday, so.
Well, and I'm hearing some different comments from Russ as well. They're building on the comments that I think he provided in writing, but I think we want to have people have the opportunity to comment again in the case that anyone, based on where you're currently heading, has a change of mind. Otherwise, we appear to be on a path where we don't have concurrence at this point in time with even a 3-day outage, and so that is going to need further discussion before anybody can seriously consider that we're going to be able to take that action.
Right. And Mark's also calling this morning to hear him. So I think he just wanted people's updated comments or whatever, and then we can decide from there what changes we may have, but definitely another MLC will, I'll finish that up, put in the new stuff, and get that out.
Okay, that'll be great. And then for those that go to Fitterwig, sounds like there'll be some ongoing discussion of just some of your design issues where you've had some comments.
Right, and the fallback type stuff that Russ was talking about with sockeye. So we kind of lucked out last year with sockeye because we kind of missed the temperature problem. Sockeye came through fast enough, but we have lingering sockeye you know, we were still getting up until, you know, last couple weeks of operating the juvenile system, we're still getting sockeye, you know, a sockeye in the separator occasionally and stuff like that. So we are still getting fallback. I mean, there's still sockeye lingering in the system. So, you know, but how we can address that much in the MLC, I'm not sure. We're probably going to be closing the fallback study here in the next couple of years for various stocks anyway. So.
Hey,
we'll get a lot of bid tag analysis this year from various sources on that address fallback as well. So the annual review will bring people kind of up to date on that.
Okay.
And I have a question.
Okay, we got two comments, Doug and Charlie. So, Charlie, you want to comment first?
Yeah. Just what I was looking for. You are going to provide an update from the data analysis and information at the APEC?
Yes.
Good. Okay, that answers my question.
Yep. Okay, Doug?
Chris, Doug Bouse, just curious. The MLC, it says something like no change in normal FPP operation, and I just wanted to specifically note on, so it sounds like there won't be any special four-bay operating ranges or unit outages.
No, this time that's still what they're sticking to.
Okay.
We continually check back with, you know, the project, Rich Hilton, and all those guys, and they still say as long as that dive is, you know, greater than 100 feet away, we won't have to change any operations. We checked and see if any units would be out for maintenance or typical routine stuff, and at this time, there's nothing on the list until September, so we're saying there shouldn't have to be at this time any special thing, but something can always come up. But
great. Thank you for that.
You bet. Yeah, I'll verify that again in the other MLC, so.
Any more closing comments for Chris?
Yeah, and it's Tom Morris. So the one thing I can commit to is we've talked from Nesperis and that kind of stuff, and we're waiting to get final confirmation, but we might be able to slide with a three-day outage. The 6 days is pretty much a no-go, though, right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's a good update, Tom. Thank you.
Yeah, it is a good update. Because if that tells us, you know, we may get something done in June, but we're not going to get the whole deal, then we're going to have to plan in the contract how to do that. Instead, just kind of leave it up to some uncertainty and see what develops. So that's
so, Chris, to follow up on Tom's comment there, is there any new information from the project as you've worked with Elizabeth in terms of how much time to do a salvage is associated with just your three-day work for your actual contractor? Are we talking 3.5 days? Are we talking 4 days total? This might help him with...
Miro Spindle, John Day.
Has joined the conference.
Tammy, this line.
Yeah. I don't think it's changed much. I'll check with Elizabeth one more time. She has some uncertainty of seal on the bulkhead. You know, if it doesn't seal just the first time. You know, because they've had some problems, you know, Lobo and other projects and stuff. And so there may be some delay stuff we got to consider. But we're trying to schedule when there's actually project people on site. You know, so we aren't paying them extra weird hours to do in there and go do stuff. And I think we go ahead and take it out basically the night before when we have less passage or whatever. And so we're ready to, you know, by 10 o'clock the next morning or whatever, we're ready to start the 3 days. I don't think there's a problem with, you know, what I outlined for the salvage. The fish and the time it takes to actually bring it down, you know, especially in June. It's going to be a lot of fish, but you turn the pumps off and you slow down the attraction. We saw this year that could be down to, you know, 100 fish within a couple hours or whatever. So, I mean, right now I don't think there's no changes to what's the way it's written, but we definitely want to keep tracking that, but because of the uncertainties of, you know, squeezing that bulkhead off. Now, I don't know if it's been a problem in the past. I don't think it has been with Alter and them, so.
We'll see. We're going to be taking the ladder down, obviously, for
normal in-water work window maintenance this winter. So hopefully that will give some updated information. And in terms of the O&M responsibility that's been suggested, we can have some ongoing conversations on that. We are hoping Wes Brown, the guy that wrote the scope for the rental pumps last year, is undertaking an analysis of the effectiveness of that operation. And so we're hoping in the near term to have that information and have that be used as part of decision-making process. So I think other than that, we would have a similar process to last year in determining needs, identifying them, and then trying to secure funds to support it. So,
right. Yeah, I just... right.
That's where we're at from an O&M standpoint.
And I have one more additional comment on this.
Okay.
So I just want to make sure we have that outage occurring of Unit 1. And they said earlier in the meeting that would occur in September.
Right.
So I just want to make sure that with all these modifications and stuff, we're not in a struggle with fish passage and temperature issues again, and then all of a sudden we're just not through it, and then they take that unit out. There is some evidence that unit provided the benefit. So the scheduling on that may need to be contingent a little bit on this temperature issue as well. So I just want to make sure people are keeping that in mind.
Well, Jason's no longer on the line. That is the kind of comment. But I guess right now he's going to be going out trying to lock in a contract.
Uh-huh.
So if what you're asking is that rather than September 1, he not start until September 15, you know, that would be very clear guidance. But, you know, the maybe, coulda, shoulda is really difficult with contracting. So what we need is something definitive. Either you don't agree with September 1 and you do agree with September 15th or whatever it is.
Yeah.
If you would like to put that in writing and email it to me, I will forward it to Jason and I will let him know that we did have a late comment.
Well, let's see how much time does he need for this? When is he going to write his contract, right now, or does he have...
Yeah, so I asked him before he went out and put a contract in place that he come and brief this schedule so people had an opportunity to comment, because that's what we had told people back this spring, is that before he went out and locked into something. Now, obviously, he always has the condition that if that bridge crane repair ahead of time were to fall through, he would have to do otherwise a mod. But what he's hoping to do is put in place something that everyone is amenable to at this point in time. I think that the thing to remember, and I think he did a good job of pointing this out, is that we have a fixed amount of time it's going to take to do that work, and, you know, the later you take it out, the later you're likely to get it back. And so if you push it out right now, I think he's looking at Lower Granite, I think he's looking at fairly late in September anyway, but he did not specify a date. He basically said September. So, you know, if your comment is, you know, I think in general the fall Chinook are starting to arrive there in pretty good numbers by early September and are generally peaking mid-month.
I think around the 15th, for temperature concerns, we're pretty much... The last couple of years, we've been in the safe zone around the 15th.
Yep.
So if we could set it up to start the 15th for now, I think that would be good. And we can talk to Bill when he gets back and see if he's comfortable with that. If he's not, then maybe we can do a last-minute change. But I think as a start, I think the 15th would be a good way to go temperature-wise.
So, yeah, I did talk to Bill on this last week, and his comment was more like your earlier comment, which was, I think he felt more comfortable after we went through 2014 that by using pumps earlier, that we didn't have any stack up in the tail race down below, and sooner the better was a lot of the comment that I got from him
really,
in terms of Unit 1.
It's really dependent on what we get done with this temperature modification. I mean, if it's effective, then heck, we could probably start in July, you know. But, I mean, if it's not effective, then the 15th might be a better date. That's why I was kind of hoping for a little bit of flexibility on that. But
Well, I think what he was hoping to hear and the reason we had him on was kind of the concern, which you're a little late with it, but you're at least in the same meeting here, and I can and take it to him, that I got some late feedback that NIMS would like to see a, you know, no earlier than September 15th anticipated start date. Is that what I'm hearing from you?
Yeah, I mean, my real concern is that we don't start when we're in a temperature problem. And so if you want to, you know, say that for the 15th, then that's what it is. I just, you know, I don't know if I want to specifically set a date. I just want to make sure that we don't start when there's a problem.
So, and this time, Lord, I'm just going to tell you the 15th, because I know you're probably not going to get all the work done in by the 3rd. So unless you can guarantee us you're going to have the rental pumps on site, if we know you're going to have the rental pumps on site, I'll probably let you start September 5th, 1st. But until we get that commitment, you got to say September 15th. Yeah. So however you guys want to play it. If you want to say, yeah, if we get the rental pumps, then you guys can have September 1st. If you don't think you're going to have the rental pumps, September 15th. Does that work for you?
That's it what does. That's a lot more of what I really need to go back to a project manager as well as inside here, and that is why we brought it out, is to try to get just some firm, what are you comfortable with, established in the meeting. That will be the what we will take forward to try to do our best to accommodate then, to satisfy concerns out there. So, yeah, I'm fine with that. I do think, based on what I heard Jason say, that he probably can accommodate the September 15th. As I said before, we will be looking to, if needed, try to accommodate the rental pump again as well, assuming that we can justify that there was some effectiveness of that operation. And that's what we hope to hear more of. So I think that there's going to be some more ongoing discussion as we move forward, both with the permanent fix that should come up again in Fitterwig, as well as the FPOM issue of the O&M responsibility, should there be a need for rental pumps. So thank you. Anybody else have a comment?
Yeah, and I'm crafting an email to you basically supporting the 15th as well. Just want to
let
you know.
All right. Thank you, Russ.
Yeah, I joined late, and I was kind of thinking that, but I didn't want to. I was coming in late on the conversation right at that time, and I was concerned a little bit about if taking turbine one out, if things are still warm in early September. And I was thinking about checking with our sockeye guys and see if, you know, sockeye that passed early September did actually make it to the basin and contribute. And that was going to be part of my decision. When I heard that you need to know soon, I was like, well, go ahead and tell you that our initial thinking is September 15th probably sounds prudent as well.
Okay. Any of the other reps?
Yeah, Washington would certainly support that.
Okay.
Yeah, and Dave Wills here with Fish and Wildlife Service. I'd certainly support the scenario Tom laid out.
Okay. Let's see. Sherry, I think you're the other tribal group on board.
Yeah, I'm thinking the 15th, but like I said, if we do have the pumps there and in place and ready to use, we could probably consider earlier. We'll just have to see how temperatures are running, and we'll stay on top of it.
Okay, Oregon, is there anybody from Oregon on? Okay, good. Let's move on at this point.
Hey, Aaron, can I ask one quick question? Maybe you said you needed a justification of the effectiveness of the action, but the other question I have for you is finance. Is getting funding for this going to be a critical problem for the Corps this coming year? If you go ahead.
Well, it's just something that I don't know that we would say it's a critical problem. It's something that, from an O&M standpoint, wasn't requested in the budget, so it will take, you know, take demonstrating a need, a lot of will, understanding that what we're hearing here, the importance. At the same time, we want to be able, in the meantime, to be able to bring out to the region some of what the person that was responsible for putting together the scope of that contract felt initially, which is a little different than, you know, I think the reaction was that we seem to have a better year in 2014 than we had in 2013, and without looking at data, the intuitive response is that that's attributable to the rental pumps. So we have a technical person, the engineer that was responsible for that, that's questioning it, doing some analysis, and so we've asked him to, you know, share that when it gets done, so that we can have some discussion as we go through a decision-making process here. So that wasn't a direct answer to your comment.
No, fair. Do you have a time frame for that for him to complete the review?
Well, there was a request for an update on the pump operation at TMT, and he was going to try to have something by the end of November. So I'm going to have to wait and see, you know, but I would say that I would think we'd be having some discussions, you know, late this year, early next year on kind of what we think was effective. I also mentioned when I had this brief discussion with Bill Hevlin the other day that we could bring Steve Hall into the mix on this. Steve brings a little different perspective from the water management of the flow augmentation water, that maybe is a little different than just being on site and talking about what you received at different places where you had temperature probes, etc., so that we can really better understand kind of our scenario, you know, what we think happened, what we think our effectiveness was, that whole thing, as we try to determine what the best path forward is.
Thank you, Ryan.
Okay. So with that, I think we can move on to the Portland action items, the first one being the Dalles avian hazing.
Cordy, do you want to take this one?
Yeah, I can take it. So what I provided was just contract information from 2010, 11, and 12, because there was questions on how we hazed in those years. And 2011 and 2012 are pretty solid.
Our participant has left the conference.
2010, we had 8-hour shore hazing per contract, but we did have some boat hazing, and it's still kind of up in the air how much boat hazing we had, because we are seeing through some of the inspections that the boat hazing early, and we had some mid-season as well. But for that one, that's a little more questionable.
For what year was that?
2010.
Yeah, okay.
Which happens to be the year that we had the low steelhead survival.
Right.
But other things to factor in, 2011 was a high flow year, and 2011 was the first year with the brand new avian lines. So those are also some variables in the picture.
Bob, my main concern on this is that we have similar effectiveness in the hazing, or a combination of hazing and deterrents, like the wires, going forward that we had in 2011. So that's the key that I think maybe we may need some more discussion on this in the future, but because I think what we need is some way to evaluate that. Now, you've got some information in here from the FFU on salmonid consumed in 11 versus 10.
Yeah,
and
it's
much lower.
Correct on one of those two.
What's that?
The FFU did say that I think it's the 2010 that was a little off. That wasn't as high as I guess they recalculated it, and the 80K wasn't.
Well, that's,
anyway.
We need to get the right numbers down, but my point is that in order for us to buy off that, the 2011 performance plan of performance tests are valid and reflect what the future would hold. We need to make sure that we have the same avian deterrent effectiveness that we had in 2011. So how we measure that, I think, needs to be discussed. If we do it the way the FFU did in those years, maybe that's one way, because I realize it's a combination of of boat hazing as well as the wires that we have out there, the improved wires. So it isn't just strictly 16-hour boat hazing that we need to maintain from henceforth. But we need to assure ourselves that the amount of improvement in avian predation is consistent going forward. So that's the key here, because you know, the whole point was that you guys missed the standard in 10, you made it in 11, and the story is that that was as a result of improved avian hazing and reduced predation rates. And so if that's the case, you know, we're buying into that, but we need to assure ourselves that going forward we're doing the similar effectiveness that we had in 11. That's all I'm going to say about that. So how we do that, I think I don't want to take up more time here today on it, but it may be something that we need to talk about in a future meeting. We've got quite a blizzard going on up here where I'm at right now.
I hope you got your wood stack in, Garrett.
I do. I'm not sure how long I'm going to be able to hang on to the phone here before it blows out of my hand, but hard enough to even see my computer monitor start bouncing around.
You outside.
I'm thinking maybe he can unfog his glasses or something.
It feels like it. The whole house is shaking right now.
Check out how good your foundation is. So I've got one other point on this that's a little divergent from the avian. The other thing we kind of have that's different now than we had back in 11 was basically operations of gates, what's that, 10, 11, 12. So we also have that whole issue of basically the trunnion pin and the wire ropes, and that's where they're still based. Because I've been hearing rumblings that, and we've been told by the HHC that they want to try to get concurrence that the dowel is complete. We would like to also agree with you on that, but there's some of these outline issues, such as avian and having the project back in the same operational condition it was in 11 before we're going to be able to say, yeah, you're done at the dowels.
Yeah, Tom, I have the same issues and concerns, but I figure today is just the...
I'm just getting them on record because Tammy takes such excellent notes.
Okay, well, I'll agree with you then. In the interest.
I got that porter for you anyways, Gary.
Hey, could you bring it up?
Yeah, I'll bring it up to you. It'll be well chilled.
I forgot to add the spillway trunnion pin because I think that was, it seems to me that was, I think 2010 we had day 9 and 2011 we didn't. I think that was the case, but I can go back and verify that.
That would be good for the overall issue of compliance, which really is not a, doesn't really, I guess it can belong in O&M, but it doesn't necessarily, I don't think.
Well, the only reason it kind of belongs, unfortunately, in O&M is that O&M is going to be the poor devils that are stuck making sure the project is, continues to be able to operate the way we intend it to be.
Yeah.
I don't think trying to pin a wire ropes is going to come out of CRFM. It's going to have to come out of O&M budget.
A participant has left.
And it needs done. So,
yeah.
You're right. I just want to make sure, I mean, for this topic, that the avian hazing that we are intending to do henceforth is sufficient. So.
Yeah. And you got my agreement on that too, Garrett.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so what's our next report?
I guess we need a way to evaluate it, Bob. And I don't know if you want to talk to the FFU folks. I don't know who's on the phone for, if Wertheimer is on the phone or anybody, but what we may need to do is to get some effectiveness. And I don't want to get into a long-term thing like the sea lions here, but we do at least maybe for a few years maybe do an effectiveness study where we do similar methods that were done in 10 and 11 and just do a comparison. I'm not even sure that's appropriate. I think we just need to sit down and talk about how we address this. The easiest way is just to go ahead and do 16-hour boat hazing forever and forget about it, but I don't think you guys want to do that, and I think it may be too expensive anyway, so.
Yeah, the budget was the whole driving thing on it.
What's that?
I said the budget is what drove us back.
Yeah, I know, and I Burns not on the phone either, but I know that was his concern. So I think we need to get the folks together.
I think it's more than just the budget, though, Gary.
This is Nathan from the Fishfield Unit.
Hey, Nathan.
I think it's important to go back and just look at the data that we have, you know, as we try to evaluate bird impact.
You know, I'll leave it up to you guys to come up with a way to evaluate this. All I'm saying is that I'd like to see us
have impact. We did, and the impact was relatively small. We're talking about 80,000 someone over the entire season in 2010.
Oh, so what you're saying is that it's not the avian thing, it's something else that we don't know about. Maybe it was just the high flows and we should do another study. I can go with that. If you guys want to do it.
I can just tell you what we reported in the past.
Do another performance standard study next year.
It's consistent from year to year that the amount of predation is...
Hey, Gary, have a consistent story here.
Let's let Bob Wertheimer make a comment, and then I think you guys are getting into stuff that we're not going to settle here on the F-POM call today.
That's right.
Thanks, Dan. And I think Gary, Nathan, I was just going to say, I think, you know, Gary, something you brought up was really important. It was about the effectiveness of the monitoring that occurred during that time period and providing the same level of effectiveness in the future. And I think we should, like you also suggested, probably break off this conversation and maybe have kind of, I think you guys typically have a group meeting or something like that along these lines, but there needs to be further discussion on this.
Yeah, otherwise the whole issue of performance entertainment is just going to spin into a morass here. So Gore needs a consistent story on what you're selling us on this issue for meeting the standards, because you did not meet standard in 10, you met in 11, and the story that you're selling is that you're doing a better job of improving survival. If it was just accidental, then we still have an issue with 10. So I would advise you to think about that. Think about your story going forward, and then pull together some folks to have an overall discussion of effectiveness evaluation.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And it's not just our story. It's our stories of region, right? Because we're all working on this. We all...
True. That's true. But you guys are saying you're done. And that's... Sell that.
So, yeah, and I maybe to do out then, Bob, and Bob is kind of put together your justification, and then either at another meeting come in with maybe a one-pager or a two-pager that kind of describes better your stance on why you feel you're making it with what you're doing, and then we can get some comments going back and forth, and then if there's another meeting offline that needs to take place as a result. But rather than just, we're doing a lot of verbal here and we're not solving the problem, I think we need a strong, your justification, and this will be the case for us should we do something similar too. So you, Bob Wertheimer is correct, you are kind of setting up a situation that could happen somewhere else if they didn't have enough money to continue with what they've been doing. And so it's important that we are all sort of tuned in to how this goes, but I think it makes a lot of sense to come forward with what you're going to do to continue to meet it, which apparently you feel you've done. Let NIMS come back and or the other agencies and tribes with discussion on whether they agree or disagree with what you're doing, and then, you know, the subsequent discussions can ensue from there.
Okay, we'll do that.
Yep, I'm good with that.
So, okay, I think we're probably able to move to the next one. It looks like this was taking care of the Bonneville ice trash sluice gate installation, so we don't need any further discussion.
We need discussion.
Yeah, that's changed.
Okay, who's going to lead?
Bonneville.
So this was scheduled to occur this month for various reasons. One being I don't think the structure was fully painted, and the other being we now have Bradford Island Bridge closure and an inability to get the equipment to where it needs to be. It cannot happen in November as previously coordinated. Initially, we were going to try and bump it into winter maintenance and try and do it whenever, just in December, January, February, but it's a pretty big job. It's multi-week, and it involves multiple crews, and folks don't think it's prudent to do and take away from Washington Shore in water work. So the question I have prior to doing a formal MOC is what time period people would be okay with us trying to proceed with that gate reinstallation. It will probably be at least 2 weeks, if not three, for a Sluiceway outage to do it, because all bulkheads have to be put in, the gate put in, calibrated, etc., and then all the bulkheads removed. So it's probably 3 week full turnaround, I would guess. So I don't know if we wanted it, you know, the project has concerns from safety and the things. I know from a fish passage, it's open and it's doing what it does regardless, but in the case of an emergency, we have no way to close that. And that's a concern from the safety side of things.
But you can't close one A and B, you can close the other three, right?
Correct.
So you got that. Kind of depends on where the whatever's coming down the river is going to land on the project.
Yeah, it's that, Gary, you know, a vessel or something or a person in the water, but it's also, it limits our ability to clear that channel of debris, because the, you know, the primary method for doing when they get like an oversized log or something with a root wad attached is to close that and float it up and free it and then, you know, work it through that channel.
Right.
So it gets to be a debris issue too if we get some of that kind of material.
Yeah, I was just thinking, is there a way to put a boom around 1A and B and then have the others so you can just close them?
There is a boom. We did that when this first happened. So the boom that covers 1-1 stretches across there now. We did that as a...
Okay. Yeah, so that would be some at least something to stop.
It is, yeah. It's a last-ditch something.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing. We talked about this earlier, and I think it comes down to, you know, either doing it next winter, leaving it the entire year, or trying to choose the lowest passage time.
Yeah, I talked, you know, Jamie and I talked if there was any opportunity to potentially do it post or during spill if we had no power off one unit operating potentially.
Yeah. That would be the time. So I guess that, you know, if we can guarantee that we're not going to run that powerhouse for a 3 week period, then otherwise, I mean, that is our, July is not a good time. You know, there's a lot of subs coming out, they eat into August, and now you got a lot more steelhead and you know, that's steelhead peak passage time, and we know steelhead are famous for going backwards at times. So,
Gary, what are you thinking about, like, very end of March, like, right as spill starts?
Yeah, I mean, that would probably be the best time, because trying to do a summer outage, I think that's not a good time.
Yeah, I wouldn't go there.
Yeah.
We got two options. I mean, then do you guys think you could do, like,
early or late?
Yeah, I think you might go very, maybe, like, towards the end of February, first couple weeks in March, then hopefully not hit kelts, or do it right when spill starts and hope you don't have a bunch of flow and you can keep most of the flow at powerhouse too.
Yeah, I don't like the March
either.
That early March part would be problematic, only from NABLOC overhaul. I mean,
now that we got kelts going out then, that's not, I would not want to do that.
Yeah.
And I don't know that you can keep the powerhouse off. You need to wait till after the spill starts.
I was thinking, but I didn't know what would. I didn't want to go through the iteration of doing a formal MOC until I got some feedback on what time.
Yeah, why don't you write it up that way with a fail-safe, that if things aren't working, you know, we have too many fish or something's going on, spill, I don't know, what, river flow is really high and we still have to run the powerhouse more than we would like, with the idea of postponing it until next year, you know, that, obviously next year, in November or something like that, and then just do an analysis of, you know, your risk analysis for that. You guys feel comfortable doing that or not? What do you want?
Are you saying wait till next winter maintenance?
No, I'm saying let's do it in starting April 10th, April 11th.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
But if leave yourself a, you know, a fallback, if you can't do that, then can we postpone until next winter maintenance, or maybe
okay.
You know, and then just say, okay, so if there's something that planned for that early time frame, that April time frame, but if something should happen and we're having high flows, and we can't get that powerhouse down, then we'd have to postpone until we could do it, which would probably be November. And if that's something you guys can do, we need to know that.
Okay. Got it. I can do that and get it to everybody.
Okay.
Gary, how would you be with, like, say, like, give them a buffer, like, say, if it's one unit or less?
Yeah, that's fine.
Like that.
I just think that work out a plan and, you know, and then have a contingency.
Okay. Yeah. And I don't know if I'm completely comfortable with that one unit. I don't want any units running if we don't have that.
I don't either, but
the April release from plays March or April 10th.
Yeah, you guys probably start the second day. Wait till
I mean, we could do it days later to wait till they clear or something, Dave. Yeah. That would be better.
You're still going to run into a release.
The problem is I don't want to stop this operation because we have to run the unit for 6 hours on a day.
Okay.
Something like that. But, I mean, if you're going to run it, like, costly one or two units for a constant time, then, yeah, I think we need to push it off. But if you're going to get, like, an intermittent operation of unit one every once in a while to just, like, get flow through, that I could probably live with.
Yeah, give yourself a little leeway there. You know, how to just call it inoperable and yeah, you can fill the additional and just not run the powerhouse, too.
Yep. And that always goes so well for us.
Did I hear Scott was on the phone?
There's a couple people here choking. I think he just dropped his phone. His martini glass.
Well, that may be what you have to do if you don't have an active, have a bypass system that's working.
Yep.
Yep.
And really, you know, as you guys know, and I've talked to the operators about it as well, we've been without it just fine up to now, so everything is standing, there's no issues right up until there's an issue. And, you know, so it's not predictable, but I'll run through it and I'll get it to you guys to look at.
Get somebody out there on the deck and tell those people that are floating into the sluice way to get out of it. Damn ahead. Do not pass. Okay.
All right. Any further comment on that one?
Hope not.
When we get to floaters, it seems like we should be later in the agenda. But okay, the next one, Bond 002 turbine startup operations. Says Royer will find out more regarding the speed no load and if load shaping guidelines cover.
So this is really more of a fish passage plan action item, and RCC and Portland District have been discussing it at great length, as well as Bonneville Fisheries. So this will come up under fish passage plan.
Good. Okay, so it'll get kicked out to the early meeting at the winter meeting?
Yeah, so I guess, yeah. But Gary, as far as Appendix C and a rewrite of it, do you want to sit down and have a meeting regarding that, or do you just want us to try and take a shot at rewriting it? What do you want to do?
I've been writing the comments up this morning on those change forms, and my comment on this one is I don't like to see speed no load for any more than we have to, so I want that. I realize you have to do it for some period of time, but we need to identify and at least to say minimize that. And the other part of this would be when you're running for 3 hours, for whatever hours you have to do to clear the unit and clear the draft tube and stuff, that we run within the peak efficiency guidelines for that. But overall, I think it's pretty good. Write up the change form and get comments on it. And make sure that the load shaping guidelines reflect what we need here.
Hey, Gary.
And it may be that the load shaping guidelines are the only thing that need to be changed a little bit.
So maybe RCC and Bonneville and Portland District can sit down and just kind of talk through some of these changes.
Yeah, I think it's probably not a bad idea to look at the load shaping guidelines anyway. They haven't been changed in, I don't know, decades. So we may want to bring that up to speed anyway.
Well, the goal would be to make all the verbiage similar so that regardless if you're reading the FOP or Appendix C or the body of the FPP, it's all the same information. And the easiest...
This should apply to all projects.
Yes.
So, as Appendix B does. And so what Ida's bringing up here is something that I think probably applies to all the projects, and it could be handled through Appendix B and covered universally.
Hey, Gary, I just had one comment about it. I'd ask Ida to bring it to you guys, because basically what it referenced initially was not the low achievement guidelines.
But the conference.
Verbiage within the body of the FPP that gives us 30 minutes on bringing a unit back.
Yeah, which I think, you know, that's something that I would just strike and have a maybe if you need something in each dam section of the plan, reference Appendix B for that. And or you could cut and paste from Appendix B, but it ought to be consistent.
Yeah, right. I mean, I guess the only thing was it wasn't trying to make a big overriding revision so much as we need an hour, not 30 minutes. I had them run through with the operators how long I actually took with our electricians, and they're like, here's the process. And we ended up playing a little bit of a game of running outside the 1%.
I totally understand.
Before it's reportable.
Right.
So to stick by the letter of the law, it didn't make any sense because it wasn't meeting the standard for the majority of our return to service.
No, I understand, Ben. I think there's two standards in the plan right now, and there shouldn't
okay.
be. And
yeah.
So we need to make a one standard, and right now the load shaping guidelines would supersede what's in the body of the fish passage plan. I mean, those things were developed in, I don't know, 91 or 92, a long, long time ago. So I think we need to go back and look at the load shaping guidelines, make sure that they apply the way we want them to apply, and then we need to reference that in all the sections of the fish passage plan that refer to running these units for test purposes outside of the 1% band.
Okay. I don't know, Gary, that would be way too clear. I think that doesn't make a lot of sense.
Doug, no comments from you.
Doug, I don't want that to be clear either, so
I to get up. Take all the fun out of it if it was clear.
True. That's true. Okay, I stand corrected. You guys make your recommendation.
And make sure it's unclear. We ready to move on?
I think so.
Bob, Cordy, do we need to have a discussion of the Dell split flows? Did you schedule a meeting? Do you have results?
Well, the results were shared at the last meeting, and we were talking about having a post-FPOM meeting, we were thinking January, but if there's going to be December FPOM, we could do it after the December FPOM. To go through where we're going to...
I think that's enough on that.
We may have to have the vibration meeting. I think Trevor wanted to try and move that to the December FPOM meeting.
Right.
Yeah, and that's going to be a kickoff meeting. So, you know, and we've been pushing that off a while. We need to get that kicked off so we kind of start moving forward.
Both of these issues are so simple, we could just do them at the same time, right?
Well, because the noise is a kickoff, there's a chance that we might be able to just kind of move through both of them if folks wanted to, you know, in December, assuming we're able to pick a date that people think we can
all do the better on either of these, Ann, because I think we're probably going to not agree at some point.
Right, right. So
I have to go to another level, and the sooner we get there, the better.
Sure, and that's
your thing.
That's fine, and I don't disagree. So, I mean, from the noise standpoint, I think if we thought that there was going to be something before we had the FPOM, that we could entertain that. I just, with all of the schedules and things that people have, meetings that people have planned, I'm not sure that between now and then, with the holiday and AFEP, et cetera, it seems like if we can plan an FPOM in December, that's probably... It generally is a pretty light schedule, so, I mean, you would anticipate that the meeting would be likely to be pretty short, and so you almost would have, like, a couple hours in the morning that you could do one subcommittee and potentially another couple hours in the afternoon to do a second subcommittee. So I guess that's what I would recommend at this point.
That sounds good. So that way we would do that. Tammy, do you have a date yet?
It's looking like the 18th is the preferred date in December.
I think so. That would be good.
Okay, so let's plan that then.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, so then we move on to updates. Walla Walla update.
A participant has left the conference.
First one is the adult ladder winter maintenance schedule that was passed out at the last FPOM. Greg, I'm not aware that you have any further updates, so we're just wondering if anybody had any comments, because have you received any comments?
Jill, I don't receive any comments, but we're ahead with the plan so far, right?
Okay, so at this point, we're kind of on notice that it was out for a month, and what's your next path forward to that schedule then, Greg? Is this kind of the locking in point in terms of we're going to assume from here forward that's the schedule?
Right.
Now, how about the Portland? I see this is NWW Winter Maintenance. Does Portland have adult ladder outage schedule that's separate, or how is that being handled? Oh,
yeah, well, all of them.
Yep. Sorry, guys. Didn't mean to jump ahead. We're almost there.
Okay, we're done with Walla Walla then. We can just go to Portland next.
We have to still talk about what you asked about, Gary, and that is, I believe Carl's on the phone as well as John Bailey. We have two of our projects that, due to the cold weather over here, we've needed to shut down. In the case of Lower Granite, it hits in secondary, and they're in the process of still getting it to the point where that will be out of service, and John can give you the details on that. The first one was McNary, and I believe John sent out information transmitted from Carl yesterday. They were successful taking that to emergency bypass yesterday. So if there's any further comment at this time on McNary?
Yeah, I have a couple comments. One that I view this as temporary. If we get warm weather, ever comes back, which it should. I'd like to get back to the primary bypass.
Yeah, actually, this is Carl. The fish passage plan says that after November 1, if you go down due to freezing conditions, which was the initial start of this thing, that you can stay down until the winter maintenance period begins after December 15th.
Okay, we're going to have to talk about that then, because that just seems like we're down. That's just too many weeks. This is a pretty early outage. This is a pretty unusual situation. I think what we were anticipating there was that would be towards the end of November, not the first part of November.
Well, the problem is, of course, it takes, half a dozen people, about 3 or 4 hours to shut the thing down, and it takes an equal or greater amount of time to restart the system, and if you do this every time the weather fluctuates, you're going to get in a yo-yo situation for every week you're shutting down and starting back up again. And that's very difficult on the crews, needless to say. That's why that provision was put in there in the first place.
Okay. I do believe that what you guys said in your coordination
conference
would bring it back up again.
Well, I don't recall what was the details there about bringing it back up. I know what the fish passage plans is, and it basically says you leave it down until December 15th, or actually the screens start coming out December 16th this year. So, I don't want to get into the situation, because if you bring it back up, I was just looking at the forecast. It's forecast region temperatures for the next week. Going out, the forecast I have here goes out 5 days. It's freezing temperatures that entire time, and then nobody knows what it's going to do, but I can just see it warming up for a few days, so we go back online, and then freezes on us again, because you're getting towards the end of November by that time, and you, like I say, you get into a yo-yo channel changes, and that's extremely, it's a huge amount of work, and the only thing we're losing right now, as far as I'm concerned, is the pit tag. I know there's concern that, the passage is not as good going out the North Trace Sluiceway. To me, it looks like a pretty good passage system, but granted, there have been no studies done one way or the other that show whether it's good or bad. I don't think it's a real problem, but
well, built a multi-million dollar bypass to avoid that, so I'd be a little careful about.
Right, right. Well, we have a multi-million dollar bypass to get them in a good, safe location, but the old location, of course, wasn't where the North Outfall was. It's where the South Outfall was, and that was, I think everybody agrees, was not the best location.
Only one of them are.
I'm hearing disagreement with Fish Passage plan, so I'm suggesting if Carl is correct that the plan covers his actions, Gary disagrees that in the long run that he wants to see this to be an ongoing operation, maybe we address it with a Fish Passage plan change form?
Well, I guess the main thing is that we get away from doing this altogether. We need to have that system run. As the other projects do through the end of the season. So, if I remember right, somewhere in here you guys said that you thought you'd be able to, by 2016, be able to run the primary bypass even with freezing weather.
Right, yeah, the Y system, which would permit us to operate during freezing weather, it wouldn't help us this last time because we had a mechanical failure, which hopefully is short term. But the Y will enable you to continue to operate the regular primary bypass system during freezing weather. The design was about 90% complete as it ended this last fiscal year. They still have a little touch-up work to do on it, but they're looking at funding the thing in FY16, which would mean that winter after October 1st of 2016, and that's when the thing would be going in by best bets, assuming we'd get funding for it.
Okay, well that's a key thing here, I think.
Right.
I'm just looking at the coordination. What you guys did say in there was we would go to emergency bypass and remain there until the passing of the freezing weather. If freezing conditions do not pass before December 1, we would remain in the emergency bypass per the Fish Passage plan.
Right, and that was before I went back and read the Fish Passage plan, which basically says from.
I do like the idea that, I mean, I think the other point here is that I'm making is that it impacts on Fish Passage. I don't think we agree. I think that you have a bypass system that we designed for survival and passage, and it's been evaluated. This emergency has not. So impacts on Fish Passage, in my opinion, are more than just the outage hours. It's the fact that we are running emergency bypass. I still don't know, and neither do you, what the survival rates are for both juveniles and adults. It may be better for adults. I don't know. Certainly the primary bypass isn't the best, but I think the orifices are probably the worst part of that, and we can't avoid those either way.
Right.
So all I'm saying is that in your expected beta impacts, we need to be upfront about saying that we don't know, and I wouldn't anticipate that the emergency was better than the bypass system we designed. And so...
Yeah, like you say, we don't know,
I'm just asking to acknowledge that in the
Yeah, I've been working with Fish Habitat for a long time, but you never know until you do a study, that's for sure.
Right, and I'm just asking to acknowledge that. Don't brush over that in your expected impacts, and we need to be upfront with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, no, we do take it seriously, and that's why we went to the trouble of designing, pushing, we kept pushing until we finally got that system design that we want for the...
Exactly.
For the the Y system there, so we don't have to go into emergency bypass.
Yeah, okay, just lay it out there that way so that we have that, up front, so if anybody back and looks at this, they can understand that we anticipated and looked at all the potential impacts. Otherwise, you got to do what you got to do, so it's damn cold out there, and it's getting colder.
Yeah, right.
This is Russ. You said that language is in the Fish Passage plan. Where specific I'd like to review it if I could, please?
On page MCN 15.2.3.1.2.I.1, it says when cold weather is forecasted for Umatilla, Oregon between November 1 and December 15th, the McNary Fisheries staff may place the McNary Juvenile Fish Facility, JFF, channel in emergency bypass until the beginning of the winter maintenance season when the juvenile channel is fully dewatered.
So where in the plan is that again?
Page.
McNary 15, MCN.
McNary 15. 15?
Yeah. Right. And okay. What I think is confusing is that that is the starting paragraph under emergency bypass during freezing conditions, but then you have sub-paragraphs down below, and one of the sub-paragraphs starts to identify the lie that Carl was talking about with this time frame, and so...
threw that in there because we thought it might be built eventually.
Yeah, okay, well, that's important that we stick with that and try to get that built.
Right, no, I agree. One of the things it does say on mechanical failure, this is really weird, mechanical failure, it's only after November 30th that you don't have to do a restart. If we had just shut down, this was both mechanical, we started the paperwork, we sent in the paperwork on the freezing thing before the mechanical failure occurred. If this had just been a straight mechanical failure, we would have had to restart as soon as the thing was fixed.
Okay, we need to look at that whole issue, I guess, a little bit more carefully. But I guess for now, Carl, just the main thing is that I want to make sure we recognize that emergency bypass is untested and therefore questionable.
All right, no, I agree.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so the next one was the MFR for Lower Granite, where we went for... into primary bypass, found out that there was inadequate water regulation within the system, had a little over 90 morts. The bypass system was placed back into secondary, which is how it's operating. John, do you want to give the update, which is tied to the next one in terms of the bypass to cold weather and when you expect that to be completed?
Okay, thank you, Ann. Gary, as far as being cold, it was minus 6 in Dayton today, this morning, of centigrade, though. Anyway, as far as Gamora Granite, they're not completely shut down yet. They had problems with their getting the screens up in Unit 6 yesterday, and it took all day to get that completed, but they got that done. Today, the screens in Unit 4 and 3 are scheduled to be pulled, and then Unit 2 to be pulled tomorrow, and then they'll be shut down. But they're having a really tough time out there. They started this process on Monday, and the MFR was sent out Monday, but they didn't. They were recently said they'd be done by Wednesday, so that clearly isn't going to be the case anymore. And so the system is still in bypass, and Unit 2 will be the last one to go down before they shut it off. So that's where we're at to this present time. Anybody have questions?
So, John, what was the schedule of taking those units out again?
Okay, currently, Units 1 and 5, their screens were already up at the beginning of this process. Unit 6, they got the screens up yesterday, and that was the one they were having problems with. Number 4 is in progress right now, and they plan to get number 4 and number 3 done today, and then number 2 done tomorrow. And then they will unwater the system at that time.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, any other comments? All right, now we're ready for the Portland winter maintenance that I almost jumped to before. Sorry.
Does anyone have any comments on that? It's available online. If no comments, we can move on.
No.
So the Bradford Island Bridge overlay work began on 3 November, and in light of the concerns expressed about the members of Coho, we are looking at having visual counts at Bonneville for the month of November next year. So it will actually have fish counts in a timely manner.
Okay. Well, we've got them. I mean, it's just that it's, timely has been the issue. So you're talking about visual counts next year?
Right, for the month of November.
Okay, good.
Which apparently is cheaper than video counts.
Then we have the data daily, hourly almost, so, well, not quite, but daily anyway.
Yes.
So, Tammy, how long do you anticipate, targeting that just for next year, or are you going to do that for a couple of years?
We're going to do it next year as a contract mod to our existing contract, and we're looking at putting it in the future contract as well.
Okay.
For Bonneville, though, not for the Dalles and John Day.
I know. So right now we've got Bradford Island down, Cascade, or the Cascade and Lush Ashore are running. We've got a lot of flow out there. And this kind of ties into the other issue, which I don't know where you're going to bring at it, on the debris.
We were going to add that after the upcoming maintenance, construction, and research activities.
Okay, we can talk about this whole thing then, maybe, because it all ties together.
Okay. Yeah, so if there aren't any other, I mean, we just put these on the agenda because it was, we were asked to keep you guys reminded of the events that have been coordinated, so that's, are there questions about anything else? Otherwise, we'll move to the Bonneville 11 update and then the debris issues. All right, so Ben, do you have a Unit 11 update?
Unit 11 update is anticipated return to service of 31 December 2014. Voice is currently working 24/6. And that's about it.
Let us know when they go to 24/7.
I will indeed.
Yeah, okay. December, end of December, you promise, right?
I'm delivering the message of 31 December, as told to me.
Okay, Ben, I know you're sick. I'm not going to take advantage of your...
Thank you.
High confidence.
You know, the other thing that brought this up to Gary in a conversation this week, they did have the... request at some juncture in probably the first week around the 7th or so of December to be able to spin that unit with the screens not in, certainly not hooked to the grid or for any length of time, but just for testing purposes to literally to rotate it and get to components that they need during the process. The screens aren't currently installed, so I didn't know if anybody had any real objection to that. They're scheduled currently to come out starting on the 16th. This would be about probably a week ahead of time.
I'm assuming they're not going to be spinning it for hours and hours on end. Just
No. Nope, absolutely not.
We're fine with that. Yeah, as long as you promise to have it done by December 31, we're good.
Deal. But that's it, Ben, as far as any other special ops, 30 minutes, 60 minutes, an hour, 8 hours, heat testing, above,
you know, I
below
specifically asked for
a consideration, and our chief of maintenance just said it's just not predictable now because...
You went back and talked to him?
I did. I went back and talked to him, and he's like, you know, it's going to be short for sure. We're not talking hours. You know, we're talking a very brief time, but maybe over several days to be able to spin the unit around and get some gauge for what they're doing, but nothing prolonged at all, that never hours.
Are you going to put together coordination on this?
I can.
Or just we just want to cover it in the minutes here?
Sure.
I mean, it's, either way, it would be good to get some record of what they thought the duration was, I guess, just for the record.
Okay. I don't know. I don't think he was trying to be cryptic. I think he really is unknown how much they need. They ask him, and he came and asked me. Like, popped out of a meeting, asked me what I saw, and I was like, you know, I can try and get a more formal answer. I said, I don't think based on the duration they were talking about, it would be problematic. But let me, you know, bring it to folks. Cause that was yesterday or the day before, and F-bombing today. That would be easy enough to ask. But yeah, I can try and get a better guess from them or likely from voice on what they think they need and send it around.
Yeah, like I said yesterday, I don't really like blank checks. I mean, if we can just have it even if long, I mean, what they think they need and add a few more hours to it, that's fine. It's just, is it days, is it hours, you know?
Yeah.
That might be the best thing. If it's not, it's like,
I think
10 hours a day, or is it 2 hours, 4 hours a day for 5 days, something like that? That's all.
Yeah, I will get that. My impression is actually that it's like hours cumulatively spread over multiple days, but I'll get more detail.
That's good. Then let's just lay that out there so the people, somewhere in the record, that needs to be captured.
But, got it.
So it sounds like folks are generally okay with it, though.
Yes.
So, Tammy, did that cover your debris issue as well, or?
Nope.
No.
No. So, Ben, you want to go into the debris issue?
Oh, sure. So, starting literally yesterday, we started to get pretty horrendous debris, mostly milfoil. I'm assuming likely due to high wind, which has been gusting to 80 in the gorge, so pretty good at breaking off milfoil and some of that surface-oriented vegetation and plastering it on everything we have, from BBSs to fishing on trash racks. So the problem is I was in there on the holiday, and none of this existed. Everything looked good. Yesterday, early afternoon, 1300 or so, they had to shut off both fish units. They were already cleaning BBSs because they'd all reached criteria for cleaning. They had to shut off fish units because of 15-foot drawdown on the trash racks on each of them, which is well beyond where we're supposed to be for structural concerns of collapse. So they, just to give you some little bit of a time frame, those went off at 1351. They came back on at 1600. By 1800, we had a drawdown of 5 feet, which again is already beyond where we're supposed to be. It's supposed to be 3 feet to shut the unit down. So they were shut down again, started at midnight. By this morning when the shift change occurred, about 6 hours later, we were back up to needing to have to shut them down. So we're getting very small couple-hour windows of operation before we're having to float trash. And we're not effectively floating trash because the VBSs are so clogged on the main units that we're at the bottom of the 1% to try to keep them running, so we're not sucking that debris off of Unit 18 like we normally can when that unit's running properly. So in light of that, and the fact that Bradford Island is down and we have basically no functioning adult passage, I started this process yesterday at the end of the day to try to get folks concurrence on being able to pull some STSs in an effort to allow our folks to focus on maintaining the fish units to keep the adult ladder up and running so we have a passage route at Bonneville at this time of year. So what they've done so far today is rake fish units. They finished it about 40 minutes ago. They are proceeding to pull screens on Unit 18 as we speak.
Okay, so you've started the pull screens in?
Yes, sir.
Well, it's, you know,
it's a slow process. You know, we schedule a week to do it, when we go down December 15th. So it's not like we're going to make it very far. They've already started, you know, well through their day. I think they could get 18 then today, maybe 17, but I think that's optimistic. And then we run into issues tomorrow, well, probably even today, with both weather and the fact that tomorrow is supposed to be the same crew doing caps and pipes for Unit 11, and then we get into who trumps who. Unit 11 progress versus.
Yeah. So the issues here is we've got record runs of Coho and Chinook continuing. I haven't looked today, but as yesterday, looking at the counts, we had over about 600 Coho, which is like 10 times the normal. And we had 150 or something like that Chinook, which is 3 or so times normal. So we are continuing to get a lot of adult passage, and we have Bradford Island shut down, and now for all intents and purposes, Cascade Island, and they're not Cascade, but Washington Shore entrances are pretty much down. I guess my concern is that, you know, we're also running really hard over at the, I think the first powerhouse was up to over 100 KCFS, at least for 1 hour yesterday. So it's been running pretty hard because you're cutting back on the on flow through powerhouse two because of the debris problem.
Right.
Then we have sea lions, stellar sea lions, quite a few of them in the tail race taking advantage of any delays. And so this isn't just a delay, which is bad enough for fish that should be spawning right now, but it's potentially just death. So my concern is that we really need to get that Washington Shore back up and running full time, and we need to get those units running up to the upper end of 1% or generator limit. Really, I think, to get the flow as much as we possibly can over to the north side of the river. Also, I think if you pull the screens, and BP is going to have trouble with this, but I think that the if we pull those screens, the corner collector should run.
And that, for what it's worth, it is in the corner collector, I mean, excuse me, in the teletype that no on-screen units will run until the corner collector was opened.
Yeah. Okay, so that's good. So I think, you know, I think you're doing the best you can, and that I just worry that you won't be able to keep up given your workforce.
I have a feeling that's the case as well, and the weather's adding a wrinkle that we can't predict very well. If wind is of any consequence tomorrow, the Kaplan pipes are not doable because of the nature of the pick. Which means they would, in a way, benefit this process because that could put guys back on folding screens. But it, you know, if both are possible.
Yeah, I think. I mean, to me, this is a more bigger emergency than getting Unit 11 back online.
And I know for a fact that there are other folks who would not agree.
I'm sure. But,
I don't know who wins that. That's way over my head.
Yeah, I know, but you have a fish emergency. I think that should take precedence over that. 11's been down since 2008. I suspect, given the hole that I see down there in the end of the powerhouse, it's going to be down for longer than December of this year. So I'm hoping I'm wrong, but I don't see how they can possibly get that thing up and running. Which, if it's a month or two late, it's not going to matter at this point in time. But we do have a lot of fish in the river. They're trying to get up the river, and we don't have passage for them.
So I guess the question I have, if we're moving down this road and the plan was, because of the advantage we have with Unit 18 having the ability to run hard if the screens are out, it has a distinct advantage on pulling debris off of the fish units if they have to be floated.
Yeah.
Well, I guess start there and move south.
Do what you got to do.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can make it all work with one unit of screens out, that's good. If you have to take several more out, then, but you need to be able to run those units.
And I guess the question I would have is, if it comes down to it on Friday, tomorrow, I think we will certainly get 18 out, but this is a really slow process, unfortunately, as you guys know.
Yeah.
It normally takes a full 4-day work week to pull all these screens, so we'll get 18 today, I'm pretty confident. I don't think 17 would be optimistic today.
Uh-huh.
But if it goes into tomorrow and it comes down to that Kaplan pipe versus the other, is the FPOM guidance to proceed with screen pulling at the expense of making that particular progress on Unit 11?
Yeah, Ben, it's Tom Wars. Yeah. I mean, whether Unit 11 comes back December 31st or February 1st really is not a big issue for us. The fact that you're actually impacting adult passage, and God forbid if there's a bunch of sea lion mortality on those coho, I'm going to hear all kinds of delightful comments about that. I don't think that's something we really want to be prioritizing. I would also strongly recommend you guys might think about opening a corner collector just to help you with debris on units 12, 13, 14, because that's probably going to help take a lot of millpool away from them and hopefully make it so you're not having to madly try to keep those DBSs clean, because then you can maybe get those units running more toward the mid-range or toward the upper end of the range.
Sure.
I mean, the main issue right now is you are having to not basically put a lot more flow over Powerhouse 1 where there's no adult passage, and I don't think that's really one of our best situations ever.
Right.
So.
And we do, like I said, I believe they're in the process right now, 2018, so they should have already opened the clinic. But I'm actually at home, so I can't guarantee that, but I will find out. That's the way the teletype was written, that no one screened unit would operate without the clinic collector being first opened.
And then, did you also put on a teletype that you'd run 18 at the upper end of 1% to run that harder?
Yeah, that will be their plan. I think they'll revert back to the FPP that I think supports that. I guess the question is that what we want, or are we considering gen limit?
I would go to gen limit. That's kind of where I was thinking. You know, get as much flow over there as you possibly can. This is an adult issue. All we have is shad in the river for the most part.
Yeah, anything you do to get more debris off those fish units is a better thing.
Yeah, that would help.
Okay.
Yeah. Call it an emergency. That's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, and I would echo John or Gary's comments too. We should take precedence delaying unit. Delaying unit 11 for 1 month is going to be good at the point.
Okay. So 21.
So Ben, this is Dave. Yep. Wills, what is gen limit on 18?
I don't know off the top of my head, Dave. I really don't.
Yeah, it's about 8, 21, something like that, maybe. Or
it's very little above the upper 1%.
Okay.
It's pretty darn close, actually.
Okay. So I would guess 19, 20 range, I suppose.
Yeah, that's what I guess too.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah, I just don't think it's going to look much different overall.
Okay. Thank you.
So yeah, and then Ben, you may have to coordinate on what happens once you get past the emergency and everything calms down again, if it does.
Sure.
You know, reinstall the screens or leave them out or whatever.
Okay.
That'll be their issue. We just don't know how long this is going to last. It seems like it's
forever. I mean, I guess the one advantage is since we're starting at 18 and the reinstallation protocol has to start with priority units, that would be 18, so we can kind of go right back to where we use if that's the only unit we pull.
Right.
So we're in a good position for following the FPP reinstallation protocol.
Okay.
Hey, Tam, are you helping with Fish and Wildlife Service Fish Health Report? I think that's next.
Really, that was just to let people know that the fish health report that was requested a couple months ago is available on the web, and I believe I emailed it out with the agenda.
Onculosis. No surprise there.
No.
Okay, then next one would be, it looks like Washington Fish Ladder Gate Operation.
Willamette Falls Locks.
Willamette Falls Lock, okay. If you better just keep leading your last two Portlands, Tammy.
So this one actually goes back to Hausman. I believe last month Ida reported that they were going to go back in there and try and salvage steelhead, so this is just the final follow-up on that.
I don't know if Ida's on the phone at the moment. She was earlier, but I think she might have had to drop off.
No, I'm here.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Do you have an update on that?
Sure. So we went down shortly after the last FPOM meeting, and pretty much they opened the lowermost gate, which the lowermost pool, they leave the gates open, and it's open to the river. So they pretty much just flushed all the fish down into that lowermost pool. So that was that, I guess.
So do we have a protocol for, is this how they're going to do it every time they do maintenance over there?
They actually went in, some welders went down, and they removed some of the gates on the doors. So there is a flow-through, more of a flow-through now than there was previously. So we're hoping that will alleviate the situation, at least in that pool where the fish were found this past time.
Okay. All right. So then, any questions on that? Okay. So, Miro, are you still on?
Yes, I am.
Do You want to talk about the John Day North AWS fish pump testing?
Well, there isn't that much to talk about, just information that there is going to be work happening, it's ongoing on some of the pumps. It's a very complex issue, and there is going to be some testing during the winter maintenance when that fishery is out of service. And what else? Just to put it in perspective, again, this is pretty complex piece of machinery, computer control to boot, and just wanted to kind of address what Tom said a while ago. I would kind of advise to stay away from rumors that they were blaming the John Day crew for not operating them properly, while in fact I was involved because I had to, you know, when they were built, and I was actually impressed with our operators. We had a bunch of new operators which had skills from the prior jobs, which they were able to somehow master, and they were able to actually use those prior skills, and they were able to make them work, but there were so many other nooks and crannies, so for now, that's what it is. Hopefully we had a pretty good year this year so far, but hopefully the issue will be finally resolved by the next passage season.
Amir, I'm not exactly sure what you're crediting me for or not. My main question was, is the new pumps, there was a problem with one of the shafts? And I'm
trying
to verify whether the other ones are going to have that problem or not, and is this going to be an ongoing problem, a maintenance issue that we're going to have to kick back to CRFM?
What I was referring to, Tom, was that it's a complex issue because it's the manufacturer versus the project and contracting office and construction office and so forth. So that work is ongoing, so it's just you know, natural that there are different type of interpretation what the problem is. But from my understanding was, which I'm not really on top of it too much because it's too technical, the investigation is still ongoing, the work is ongoing, and it's kind of unfortunate that it's taking that long. But until it's finished, we just have to be patient. That's it.
Okay. Any other comments? Was John on the phone to handle the Portland Fitterwig, if there was any information exchange needed?
And before we leave Miro there, Miro, did you have an issue with the lower weirs on the south side? Is that something you were going to bring up in FPOM, or is that, I'm just remembering that from another conversation?
That was supposed to be, was it Fitterwig? I don't have an issue, but I think it's kind of forgotten from the past, because the three unneeded weirs had been already removed on the north.
Right.
And evidently they're not needed. They cannot help. They can only hurt fish passage. So I think it was on the short list before.
I didn't mean to run us down that path, other than I just didn't know if that was something that you were going to bring to O&M or if that's a Fitterwig. It sounds like it's a Fitterwig issue.
I think it was a Fitterwig.
Thank you.
Yeah, welcome. That's it.
Sorry.
Yes, okay. John, are you on the phone?
I don't think he is, so we'll just postpone that.
The Fitterwig meeting in the Portland District was, I mean, several of us were there, and the discussion topic was the flow control plate issue and the study that was going to be done for the Bonneville FGE, second powerhouse FGE work, and I think there was a new study proposal that came out as a result of that meeting, and folks should have had a chance to review that under SRWG. And the upshot of all that is that we're looking at Spring Creek fish only, not looking at river run fish. We're looking at A and C slots, I believe. Maybe B as well, I don't remember. Of units 15, 14. That crap, I'm not getting it all right myself here. I think it's 14. So anyway, one of the units. And we're looking at flow control plate as a way to reduce the flow and turbulence in the A slot, no plate in C slot, and a partial plate in E slot. And so we're going to be looking at those survivals and descaling and fish condition for those slots. And NOAA Fisheries is doing the study. Randy Absalon is the primary investigator on that. And that's it.
Yeah, I'll just chime in a little bit here. Gary had a conversation maybe a week and a half ago with John and Randy, and we talked about fish needs and so forth. And the rewritten study proposal just came out yesterday or the day before, so I still got to forward that to the hatchery. But
okay,
we're going to work out the fish stuff.
Okay. Thanks, Dave. I'm sure John would have done a better job than I did, but I muddled through.
That was a lovely job. Thank you.
Next.
So,
what's this?
So basically, this is on here because it wasn't added to the Fitterwig agenda. I had forgotten to get. There is a spalling issue, but basically, what's happening is it's moving out of Fitterwig and CRFM funding into O&M funding.
Okay.
So just wanted FPOM to be aware of that.
So, Tammy, did you guys come to an agreement that it wasn't a design issue that you guys are now comfortable with taking that on as your responsibility?
Well, what they found is that the fix is pretty much cost prohibitive. They'd have to line the entire channel because it's the expansion at the expansion joints, and they don't have a good way of fixing that in the long term. So it'll be spalling repair every year, every other year, however often it needs to be done.
So that's our long-term solution is a guy with a bucket of concrete? Okay.
Yes. At this time, yes.
Is there a chance that, I know there's all these safety issues, is there a chance to get in there and look at that this winter for some folks besides the core folks?
Yeah, Hausman?
Yeah. Hey, folks would have to have their HCCP training to be able to get in there, but absolutely.
I'm going to volunteer, Tom. Yeah, thanks. Don't want your fingers on the gate control, though. That'll be Scott. Yeah, I know. I might get a quick trip to the estuary. And then, Tammy, one other issue in here. I believe some improved trash rack for Powerhouse 2 was supposed to be done and installed. That kind of gets back to our previous debris issue. I'm assuming either that system hasn't been done or it's not working, or it's not working as designed. Which is it?
Well, you know, Rarisich isn't on the phone right now, so I hate to speak for him with his project. So we should really wait on that until he is able to answer in a more concise and clear manner than I could ever do.
So the long and short is that it's not installed.
That would be correct.
Trash rake.
Well, the rake rack system improvement we were supposed to make over there.
Gotcha. No, it's not done. And when it's complete, again, John will be better able to speak to it. But when it is, we're going to monitor with an ROV to see the effectiveness or lack thereof as we run it through its paces. But it is not complete.
There was some thought that it was going to be done, I think, before November, and that we were going to get a test on it to see how it was going to work, and obviously that has not been done. Okay.
That is correct.
Oh, yeah. I'll figure out whose shins I need to kick later.
Yeah, that needs to be carried on to a Fitterwig meeting, and John needs to be aware of that.
So do we have Jeff Fryer on today? I know he was on last month. I don't know if he was going to give a further update this month. Or
Jeff is on a tour right now. But his understanding was that after a hydraulic review of the location that he had proposed, there was not a problem. I don't know if that's correct or not, but that was his understanding. And that he was just looking at there was other issues that FPOM had to deal with, because otherwise he thought he was kind of okay. If not, he can come back to the December meeting and have an update then. Yeah, my concern was that that antenna, the downstream one, stuck out way too far into the channel.
Okay, but the upstream one was okay?
I think so. If I remember right, I haven't looked at it for a while, but I think that was just the one that was sticking out like 4 inches on either side. It seemed to me that they could do a better job of making that flush.
Was that the upstream or the downstream?
I think it was the downstream. As the way the water flows, it'd be upstream. I was thinking in terms of fish.
Yeah. But I will relay those and make sure that the design is as flush as possible, that kind of stuff. And
Tom, it's the same thing I said at the last FPOM meeting about it, so he can just look back at it.
Cool. I will pass that on.
Okay.
Okay, sounds like we might be ready for the RCC update.
Everyone get your dingo cards out.
Do you have it? Hey, Lisa, do you want to do it or do you want me to do it?
I'm sorry, I was on mute.
Oh, okay.
All right. Roll, please. Starting with Lord Granite, yesterday's average outflow 25.5 forecasts for 5 days out at 20.6 and 10 days at 20.2. Declaring yesterday average 125.5, 5 day forecast at 120 and 10 day forecast at 113. Honorable yesterday average was 147, 5 day forecast at 129 and 10 day forecast at 123. Are there any questions?
Lisa, what was McNary yesterday?
125.5.
All right, thank you.
Okay, thanks, Lisa. Lamprey updates. Anyone, I heard Nathan on earlier. Do you have anything to say? I think from the standpoint of Walla Walla, you know, we probably are continuing whenever the projects are doing their cooling water strainers to update pretty much monthly any information from our projects. Nate, you got anything to say? No longer with us. How about Avian?
The only thing I want to say is Ben is that we did complete the corner collector avian line reinstallation last week, so they're back up.
Love that.
Nice job.
Yeah, surprised me.
Yeah, the project did it as opposed to USDA for the first time, so.
Oh.
A little bit of a learning curve, but we got it done.
Yeah, that looked great. Thank you.
Okay, keep it moving. I think the next item, we had a brief discussion at the last meeting, and then the information was put up on the FPOM website, so I think this one will come off the agenda. Hopefully people that are interested in what was gathered can go out there, and if they have feedback, they can provide it back. That was the critical infrastructure. The next one will be DPA updates.
I don't think we have anything. Scott, are you? I don't know if Scott's still on the phone. Okay, if he's not, we don't have anything.
Okay.
I'll go.
Okay. Then we're ready to move on to coordination notification. John, have you joined? John Reynolds. So maybe John Daly, let's do the Lower Granite NERC WEC exciter testing first, and then we'll move into Ice Harbor.
Thanks, Ann. You had me going there with John. I go, well, which John are you talking about? So, anyway, I have sent out a coordination request for form for NERC testing out to Lower Granite. What this is about is that there's safety equipment that need to be tested with for the Unit 3 exciter. And the exciters are what controls the generation of power in the turbine unit itself. They have to be tested with the unit shut off, because otherwise we could risk a powerhouse blackout, and nobody wants that. But, so for safety reasons, with the unit needs to be shut down, isolated, and then they run the actual test on the exciter. These
tests really don't take all that long, but the project has asked for a 5-hour work window on November 17th. This is also important because they have to meet certain electrical standards for North American Reliability Corporation. That's a nonprofit type corporation that sets standards for generation and transmission. And then also the Western Electricity Coordinating Council people with their transmission lines. Anyway, they ought to be in compliance with their standards, so it's compatible with all equipment out there on the electrical grid, and also the ability to control the generator while you're running it. Anyhow, normally these tests are done when the unit is out of service for other purposes, like global testing. But unfortunately, Unit 3 did not have any recent scheduled outages, so they need a special outage just to run this test. So it's scheduled for November 17th from noon to 5 p.m., but we actually expect that to take less time than that. Anybody have comments on this particular operation?
So, John, I think without any comments, then we can go around and ask everyone, but I'm assuming that everyone would approve it, so you would be comfortable to move ahead unless anybody speaks now?
Yeah, we're fine with it. Yeah, and we're fine with it.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks, everybody.
Problem. So the other one is the Ice Harbor Unit 3 welding. John Reynolds was going to join us. Are you on, John? Not aware that he's joined, but I think let's go ahead and listen for comments initially. I know in a brief exchange yesterday, it sounded like, Trevor, you may have some comments.
Yeah, just my only concern in reading the MLC, I don't really see much of an adult issue here. The angle of the blade issue is something that came up, with granite being welded at a particular angle, and, it somewhat had an effect on the level of FOP spill. So there's kind of that same concern here. I didn't really see, how it was outlined in the MOC. It says that it's likely that Unit 1 will be operating. If that's the case, if Unit 1 is operated through the entirety, I don't think this is an issue. However, if there's a case where Unit 1 were to go down or be scheduled to go down, and we had to operate Unit 3, Unit 3 would no longer operate at, say, 8,000 CFS. It would operate at 11 or 12, which in the summer period could take your percentage of spill from the ultra high level of 70% or whatever it is during that period down to maybe closer to 50%, which I don't have extreme concern about, but at least the MOC should be clear about that. What's the probability of Unit 1 going down, not running, and then having to run either Unit 2 or Unit 3?
Okay. I think we can mention that in there. My understanding is that we feel that there's a low probability, and if and when we were in a situation in late summer where we had an issue where there wasn't enough water in the river, we would need to do some coordination similar to what we had done at Lower Granite. The fact is that this is the lowest unit on the snake, and presumably we could be more effective working with Bonneville to try to come up with the best case scenario to minimize that, although it would be new ground, but we do feel that we have pretty high reliability at this point in time, was the discussion that I've heard, so we could certainly add something like that in terms of potential for fish impacts, and then just acknowledge that if and when we got to an extremely low flow year where this was impacting our ability to follow what we have in the biop, that it might require additional coordination.
Yeah, I don't know if it would actually affect what's in the biop, because under the biop, you're probably going to spill, you know, to gas cap, which you can't really do typically. So during that period, so what you would do is you would spill to minimum generation, and so you
right.
would still be technically spilling to minimum generation. But the decision to go to a 23-degree angle instead of, say, a 21-degree angle or something would basically mean that you're going to spill a lower percentage than you could have. But, you know, if I don't really have a huge concern with it, as long as Unit 1 isn't scheduled to go out and there's a low to zero probability that Unit 1 is going to be going down, I'm totally fine with it.
Okay. And I think what John added was a lot of the previous research that had taken place back in 2007 to support this angle as being better for survival for juveniles, which is kind of why it was chosen. So
yeah.
We will update the MOC. Anyone else have any comments or concerns? Okay, this is great. We were hoping to be able to move forward with this work so that we could get it back in service, you know, next spring in a timely manner.
Yeah, and one question. Is, is that 23-degree angle, is that still within the 1% range? It sounded like it was, but...
Yeah, I believe it is. And my understanding is that the 22 that they ended up at Unit 2... really was meant to be more the 23-24, and as you're aware, sometimes it can be really challenging when you're doing this, and so I think they covered it in the MOC, but for Unit 3 at Ice Harbor, they are going to have HDC come out and assist the project with trying to be as precise as they can when they're welding these blades.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't have a huge issue with 23. I was just trying to figure out why we were picking something over 22, and... They talked about the survival difference in the report, but I remember that report, there was a lot of overlap, and I'd have to look at Gary since he spends a lot more time, since he's Dr. Turbin.
Yeah, and there's not that much difference.
Yeah, that was my point of saying
survival-wise here. I mean, we really don't know, it's just based on model observations, but...
Yeah.
It comes down more to not so much survival to the turbin concern as it is the spill issues that Trevor was talking about.
Yeah, and that's part of the reason why I was thinking, like, why don't we just keep it at the same of what we currently have a unit at, so that's something different. But I don't have a strong
knee-jerk one way or the other.
First time they're trying to hit it, second time trying to hit it. I mean, I think John's analysis would support that the 23 is a better angle for fish passage to the extent of our knowledge. So... I'm also trying to think what the schedule is for installation of the new runners, too, because that's another issue that's coming up here in a hurry.
That was the question Dave had, and I thought, if I observed that it had slipped a little bit again, I just don't remember when the newest day, was it 16 or 17?
17. That's what we put in there, is that, yeah, this would be starting in 17. So, and it would take, I believe it goes 2017 through 2018?
Yeah, it takes... two with the option for three. Well, this unit would eventually be replaced.
Yeah, it's the second unit to be replaced, I believe, right?
So it's not like this is going to be stuck this way forever.
No, just a couple more years.
Yeah, I think they said 17 to 18,
it's scheduled for replacement at this time.
I'm going to remember you said that, Gary, and I'm just going to keep thinking about Unit 11 at Bonneville.
Yeah, I think that, but it is the same company working on both. I don't know.
Maybe they've gotten faster.
Yeah. Different divisions for the same company, I hope.
Yeah. So, yeah, and I mean, we're not going to squall with 23. I think that's fine. I mean...
Okay. Okay, so Gary, thanks for providing the supportive information for Tom there, for what John put together. Does anybody else have any comments then? Okay, with that, I think we're on to 15 Mile Creek, because I believe, Tammy, you said Wasco PUD was not going to attend, so you didn't want to have that one stay on the agenda?
That's right, they'll come next month.
About
And can I just say one thing on the critical infrastructure? I just brought that spreadsheet up and was looking at it, and wow. I don't want to see this drop off the agenda.
John Reynolds?
Let's have a discussion on this.
Has joined the conference.
The next meeting, and maybe you guys could kind of lead us through this a little bit.
Yeah, we can have some ongoing discussion. I think
that was the intent.
What's going to go on is that, you know, in terms of process here, there's probably going to be larger process around all the infrastructure that really will be more formal and guiding from people that lead maintenance activities. And this could be, if we're at a project level, something applicable to project bios, fleshed out differentially, so we could have some discussion and maybe just run through that with comments.
It was an issue to get this on the webpage. It's there now, so that's great, but looking at it, and it's very complex, not only just all the detail that's here, but also the spreadsheet. It was a little hard to navigate, so.
Right, so, you know, there was some activity that, you know, was envisioned early on. Some of that didn't take place. We kind of got left with it, got asked, what do you have? Let's get it out there for people to take a look at. I think the main thing that we should focus on here is that it's really important for each of the projects that we understand what it is that they need to be reliable. I think some of the projects did put a top 10 prioritization, didn't they?
I'm seeing, say, high, medium, high. I don't see any lows.
Maybe we can have some more discussion rather than take it off. That's
why don't we, I don't want to take it on today, but I'm thinking, because people should look at this, and what I'm thinking, maybe we just go over the next year, we go project by project or something through it, and just have a look about the priorities, because that was the intent of getting this out there, was to identify the problems, look at the priorities, and then put pressure on Congress, if necessary, to get some funding for this.
Okay.
So, okay, thanks.
Yep. So, John, you joined late. We just finished Unit 3 at Ice Harbor. I think the only question that came up that I gave an answer to that I wasn't positive about you might be able to assist with is the probability of Unit 1 going out of service while we're undertaking the Unit 3 blade welding activity. So my understanding is we did not have any information that it was not going to be a reliable unit. I didn't mean just during blade welding, but during the next couple of years as we're operating, so we'll be relying on the fact that Unit 1 is over there to promote adult passage, and the issue was brought up, and we were asked in our MOC to brief people on what the probability of Unit 1, you know, being able to stay in service is. And my understanding that I put forward is that we feel that it's reliable and that we intend to rely on it, and I'm not aware of any challenges there. I'm not sure if you can add to that or not, but I can talk to the project otherwise.
Yeah, I think that's a project question. I guess as far as reliability of that particular unit, it's not something I'm going to be able to come up with that with their maintenance records and things like that.
There's no scheduled outages for Unit 1 in the next 2 or 3 years.
I mean, they have
to check. They have a 5-year plan. I can check.
They probably have scheduled outages, but I mean, they just have to schedule it smartly. And they said they certainly have some flexibility in moving that to. You don't want to necessarily get to the lowest flow time of the year, but you also don't want to be in the highest flow. So, there's some strategy in taking Unit 1 out now.
Okay. I didn't mean to jump backwards, but I was hoping to get him on when we had it, but I think we're okay. Does anybody have any additional questions while we've jumped back? No, I think we're good. Gary helped punt for you a little bit on a question.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah, I missed my only opportunity to chime in, but
always more discussions in the future to talk about turbines, I'm sure.
Okay. So.
Thank you for joining, and I think we're ready, Portland, to go to your 15 Mile Creek data. Is Derek on?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me? So I've got a handout that goes along with the discussion here. It's labeled Faber FPOM handout on the website. If you have a chance to open it. This is part of a presentation that I'm going to be giving next week at
John Arnold,
the tributary bypass workshop.
The conference.
And so if you get to see it here, you get to see it twice. So I'm just going to go through the first three slides pretty quick. So we tag out-migrating steelhead going out of 15 Mile Creek and Mill Creek, which is part of the 15 Mile major population group of steelhead. We use screw traps and then tag the wild steelhead as they're going out. And so the data I'm presenting is going to be the recaptures, the fish that come back to Bonneville and then go upstream of Bonneville and then back into the creek. And at 15 Mile, we've got a pretty extensive pit tag array set up. So we've got seven separate arrays of different tributary mouths and confluences. And we've got a weir there and a video weir as well, and a weir trap where we can capture adults and interrogate those for pit tags, and we've got a pit tag reader on our video shoot as well. So it's typically between 95% and 100% detection rate for adults that enter 15 Mile Creek. So we've got a pretty good handle on those fish as they're coming in. And that number three slide is, you know, an example of those pit tag arrays as they're Passover arrays. So the fourth slide just gives you an overview of where these creeks are. At the tributary bypass workshop, I'm going to be presenting the Chute's east side trips and some of the Hood River as well. But for this one, we're just looking at Mill Creek and 15 Mile Creek. We don't have any detection at Mill Creek yet, but we do have out-migrating smolts, and we interrogate those at the dams. Both Mill Creek and 15 Mile, as you know, are come out just downstream of the Dalles Dam. And so on this fifth slide, it's an example of what I'm going to be going over. It's the, if you're looking at this, it's the total percentage of fish that would pass Bonneville in a year. So these are summer steelhead, so they're going to come over in, you know, July, August, September, and then they won't spawn until the next spring. So you're looking at, so this graph has, you know, black and blue and red. So anything red is a fish that was contacted going over John Day Dam or beyond. And we have fish going all the way up to Granite. And then the blue would be anything in the Dalles Pool. And then the black would be anything contacted. If last contact would be at the Bonneville Dam, so we didn't contact it going any farther upstream than that. So that's kind of what we're looking at. So,
Eric?
Yeah.
These are all known source. These are all fish that we knew were going into 15 Mile.
These are all fish that, yeah, so, I haven't gotten to the 15 Mile yet, but yeah, so these are all smolt that were tagged in either Mill Creek or 15 Mile Creek.
Right, okay.
And so they're returning at Bonneville Dam, so we get, you know, between 30 and 90 fish or so that are contacted at Bonneville Dam in a given year. And so this is the fate of those fish that we know that come over Bonneville.
Right. So you only had three fish above the John Day, is that what that means?
Yeah, that's for a description. So this is just a descriptive graph, yeah. So
oh, okay.
If we're looking at
those three fish, they went over John Day. And then we've got like 25 or so that went over the Dalles, and 20 of those ended up into the Deschutes.
Right.
And then 14 just went over Bonneville and didn't go any farther. So the next graph we're looking at is the fate of the Mill Creek fish. And so we have we started tagging them in 2012, so we get returns for 2013 and 14. And the 2014 were updated yesterday, so these are really up-to-date data. You know, in 2013 we had basically 60% of the fish going above the Dalles Dam, and then a little bit higher than that, 65%, for this year already. And a good portion of those fish in that light blue, is they're going into the Deschutes. And then we've already got three that have gone up to John Day or McNary so far this year. And that Lyle Falls, that's on the Klickitat, so that's within the Bonneville pool. We get a couple of fish down there. And then the next slide is 15-mile returns. So we have been tagging fish in 15-mile creek since 2006. So our first returns are coming back in 2008. As you can see, we didn't have detection at the Dalles or Deschutes until early 2013, the spring of 2013. And so we don't really have any information on, you know, if they passed the Dalles or not before then. But it looks like another good proportion, pretty consistent, 70% or so go over the Dalles, with about, you know, 5 to 10% going as high as John Day or beyond. And a good chunk of them duck into the Deschutes and seem to hang out there for a while. And the next slide.
Hey, hold on for a second, Derek. This is Bob Wertheimer.
Yeah, go ahead.
So on this slide we're looking at right now that has the 2008 to 2014 data,
right,
are these fish that were last detected in 15-mile or none? Because I'm not seeing any 15-mile detection. You know, you don't have a box.
Right. We don't have a box for that. And that's what the next one is, are the conversion rates. So the next slide will get into that. How many fish of these that were detected, how many got back into 15-mile creek? And so this next line graph then is the conversion rates for each site. So if we've got, you know, 10 fish that the farthest they went in 2013 was beyond Bonneville, then in 2013 we saw two of those fish come back into 15-mile creek. So that corresponds with the 20% that we see for the Bonneville Dam line. And so that's kind of the apparent survival of fish coming that were last detected at Bonneville and then entered into 15-mile creek. And for fish that were going out, I'll just go for the last couple of years, since those are the most recent data where we've got data for fish going over the Dalles. Now, for both 2012 and 2013, we see conversion rates of fish that went over the Dalles of 50%. And then we've got 1 year for the Deschutes fish, which they've got about 78% of those fish that went into the Deschutes for 2013 did come back in 2014 to 50-mile creek. And then, you know, since we don't have too many fish that actually go over John Day, those conversion rates are pretty noisy. You know, last year we got all of them back, but in years prior we haven't gotten any of them back. And then that dotted line is the apparent survival for all the fish that were contacted at Bonneville. So that's all steelhead that were detected at Bonneville and then made it into 15-mile creek, and then we've got our pit tag detection efficiency tacked onto there as a 95% confidence interval for the last couple of years, and we'll get that for 2013 this cycle as well. So it's, you know, between 50 and 60%
And then that last graph there, does anybody have questions on that at all before I move on?
Hey, Derek, I was looking at your Bonneville Dam survival, or the, actually it's the Bonneville Dam last detection.
Right.
And that is dropping over time pretty dramatically.
It is. Yeah. So
those are fish that weren't detected elsewhere, just at Bonneville.
Just at Bonneville.
And so they were apparently lost somewhere in the Bonneville pool.
That's right.
And it almost seems like it doesn't jive well with your overall survival.
That's true. Well, we get a better conversion rate from fish. We can have a lot of fish going into the chutes, and those seem to
right.
survive pretty well.
Okay, I'll think about it.
Hey, Derek, this is kind of a little different question.
Sure.
So for the major population group, do we have a population size estimate? So to put these data into context. In terms
yeah,
of
good point.
We do. It's between, it's between 1,000 and 2,000 fish for the 15-mile group.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so we've got the last one here is then just a look at the run timing. And so there's a lot of lines on here. The dotted line is the 15-mile hydrograph. And pretty much if the hydrograph, if the flow is between about 40 and 50 CFS, they have access to the creek, the whole creek. And then there's a bit of a fall that they have to jump over at the mouth to really gain access. And once it hits about 50 CFS, they don't seem to have much of a problem with that. And then on top of that is the cumulative distribution of arrival timing into 15 Mile Creek. The solid line is the fish that were upstream of the dalles. And then returned into 15 Mile Creek for 2014. This is the last spring. And you can see right after about March 1st, they really start piling into the creek. And similarly, we've got non-Pittek fish. So these are the fish that are encountered at the video weir that are not necessarily Pittek. And that their cumulative distribution is that red dotted line, and so those fish seems to have about for 2014 there are about 5% of the fish in the creek already before that March 1st, which is also the day that the sluice way comes on for the Dow. And then they took off again, really similar to the Pittek fish. And then I put in the 2013 video weir arrival just for context. It was quite a different flow year. It was a lot more stable, a lot less flashy. But that's about all I got for you guys. Have any more questions?
So you're going to present this in Walla Walla next week?
Yes.
Okay.
Along with the Hood and the Deschutes East Side tributaries.
We'll think about a little bit more before then.
Yeah. Those, I like to give you an update on those. They don't seem to stray much past where they're going for the Hood and Deschutes East Side. It's mostly these guys.
I have another separate question. I've heard that 15 Mile Creek is, in the past anyways, is the eastmost population of winter steelhead. Now, is that being confirmed that those are actually summers that just go in later?
Yeah. At least the vast majority of them are. I don't know if there are any winter fish in there.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, and last question, I can't find you back in there. Is it on email? Is it attached to yet, Palm?
It's on the website for the FPOM.
For the November
FPOM meeting.
Right.
Yeah, I'm there. I'm there. I don't see it.
It's,
Charlie, refresh your browser. I posted it this morning, and oftentimes if you don't refresh your browser, it won't pick up new postings.
Ah, okay. Well, I'll try that then. Thanks, Cameron.
Hey, this is just a question. I just want to confirm the operational timing of the sluiceway here. So at the Dalles, we operate the sluiceway from, or it's closed from 15 December to 1 March.
Correct.
Interesting presentation. There's a lot of data here. Thank you, Darren.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Okay, we ready to keep moving to Fishing House?
Oh, boy.
I think this, Mr. Wertheimer, are you going to lead the clipped versus unclipped discrepancies, or is that still Robert Stansel?
It depends if Robert's on the line.
I hear no response.
It's in my my basket then.
Okay.
So, last FPOM, this analysis was requested. The analysis was, I believe, posted and sent out to everybody. To cut to the chase, I didn't do the analysis to kind of, I just read over it. I've actually been reading over it during some of this call. It seems like there was more of an issue in 14 than we had in 12 and 13. There are issues. It seems more of an issue with coho, and particularly in the lower snake dams. Some of this is a counting issue and a QAQC issue with the counters. I think I should be viewed as the messenger here, and I don't want to throw anybody under the bus. I think we have some things to work through. But it really, to me, when I look at these data, it depends on what you're doing with these data, what your intent is. And so I think the end users kind of need to speak to what their needs are and kind of help us. I mean, as we move forward, we've identified the problem. We're going to do our best to correct the problem. But it's hard to do a post-hoc analysis on these data because a lot of them are based on visual counts. So if the initial QC by the contractor didn't catch it, you know, we identify post-hoc and QA, it's hard to go back and correct, is my point.
So, Bob, you've got a lot of, I mean, next year we may see another similar year to numbers-wise for Chinook anyway. Are you guys proposing something to change here? I tried to muddle through it, too, this morning, and I just did lots of pages and a lot of bits of data here, and what I don't see is, okay, well, this is broken, other than there's so many fish at certain times of the year, like September, that they can't keep track of everything. So are you proposing to cut back on some of the observations? And you want to know what people think about that, or what?
No, it's not that we're going to try to cut back on observations, nothing like that. It's just that we're going to remind the POC out there for the adult fish count, QAQC and that type of stuff, that these counts are important this time of year. We're going to continue to do them. We're going to put down counts, you know, do this split as much as we can do it. In that comment also that was made out by the Bonneville Fish Unit, it talked about the need for, you know, we look at that information, just make sure we're getting it out. There's three different levels, I believe, that he also talked about there, too, where there's a number of fish that they can't do the count, those count station hours, because they're probably inundated. There's going to be a comment. They got to be reading the comment to let the people at Bonneville Fish Unit know that they weren't able to complete the index hour at that time, so that information doesn't go out. That's one of the examples that they're planning on doing next year. And reminding them that this unit, I mean, these index counts will be going on again next year.
And I also think, Greg, with some of the video, we're looking at some different video improvements we want to do. And we kind of talked about this briefly the other day.
Yeah.
We think we can use video to aid our QA. Of course, contractor does QC. The Corps does QA on the contractor. And what we need to do is, now that we've identified the issue, I think we're going to inform the contractor. This needs to be done. We're going to be watching this part of the contract, and we're going to be watching it closely, and we think that'll help really alleviate the problem, is just bring attention to it. making sure the contractor's QCs are looking at the individuals who are doing the work and doing the proper QC, and we'll be doing the QA on them. I think identifying the issue is a big part, because this hasn't been going on that long, and I think this kind of slipped under the radar is part of the way I perceive this and reading it.
Well, I guess I'm still not quite sure what the split means or what the index means. Trying to get through that, but it sounded to me like at some point here you've just got too many things for the counters, have too many things they're trying to keep track of when we have these really large passage days.
Hey, Gary, this is Nathan from the Fish Deals Unit. I'm kind of in Bob's boat, but I read through it and I've been around it, but as far as the split count goes, they are, you know, the whole question here is they want some way of separating clipped from unclipped fish. Sometimes it's too onerous to do that because there's so many fish in the window, so
right.
They have index hours they do that. Usually it's just twice a day, once in the morning, once in the evening. And the things that weren't happening last year is that there's times they couldn't do that split count. We're commenting that in the comments back to the fish deal units, but then they could then make the adjustments for that.
Okay.
But that's one of the big fixes is just kind of those three areas identified. Either they were doing it and they were calling on it, and that's fine, so that's how the system's set up and we can deal with it. They were not able to do it but didn't comment on it, and that's broken. Or they just plan on weren't doing it all because they didn't understand that was part of the responsibility. So all of those three things should be able to be addressed just by working with the contractor.
Okay.
Ready to keep moving?
I guess so. Yeah, so basically what folks from the FFU is looking for on this is just to notify people. You're not looking for any changes or and letting one, but there may be some discrepancies in the 14 counts.
Exactly. That's the biggest downside is that because these are real-time live counts, we can't go back and there's nothing to review. There's
right.
No real correction that we can apply to it. That's
right.
The big downside.
So we all just need to pound our fists on the table and say, do their job.
Well, I think it's important as we're moving forward. We're learning stuff each year. The discussion we had at the last meeting was that this likely was, or at least part of this, is stuff that's been ongoing. We don't know how long and wasn't necessarily specific, but we're identifying places that there's more QA needed, and that makes for a better program, which is, you know, what we're all trying to do as we move forward.
Right.
So I think we asked at the last that this be documented as such so that it wasn't necessarily reflective only on the current contractor as well. It was pretty clear, at least from what Robert Stansel's answer was at the last meeting, that no, this was not necessarily just the last couple of years. So
I think I read that report, and when they go back and essentially just look at the numbers through time, clip versus not clip, and so it gives some examples of where it looked like it actually was pretty decent for the last couple of years.
Yeah, and I mean, you just, I certainly get it. When somebody's really busy, it's easy to think that people are going to assume you're busy, and you just take for granted things that you need to be writing down for people that are outside that want to understand some of the constraints of the data you're collecting. So that's a lot of what you're doing here.
Well, there's, I guess that part of that report speaks to past years and how it looks like those went just based on kind of typical splits between clipped and unclipped fish. And there's some specific examples where, you know, one day the split was, you know, 200 clipped fish and, you know, 50 unclipped fish. And then the next day would be the flip-flop. It would be the opposite, the reverse of that. It just looks suspicious. It looks like an indication that things probably weren't being done satisfactory.
And that's what we're looking at addressing this year. That type of stuff, just tightening it up.
Okay, Greg, tighten away.
Will do.
So the next one, fish counting after October. This has your name associated with it, Gary. Do you want to lead it, or?
Yeah, this is something I was basically concerned from a discussion I had with the Walla Walla District a couple months ago where Brad Trumbo was mentioning, I think it was a McNary outage, maybe for the steelhead study, or the fallback study. He didn't have data to look at for November, so he was just going to use October. And I thought, well, that's not good. I mean, normally when we are being asked to, for outages or whatever, it's often in the November or March timeframe on these edges, which is a topic I've brought up in the past. And I thought, well, why don't we have data for November at McNary? And so I looked at what we have, and we have quite a few years of data actually going back into the early 2000s. So I don't know why those weren't used. It was 2003 through 7 that we had data for. And then I found, looking at it yesterday, that we actually have data while seeing the information you guys sent out on the schedule, that we had data for 2012 as well, so in November. So I don't think there's a problem here. I think it's just that people don't know the data are there, because Brad didn't seem to think that there were any data for November.
Yeah, and I quizzed Brad about that question entirely. And where he was going for his data search was the DART site, Columbia River DART site.
Oh,
the DART site does not have these other counts. The Portland webpage, I'll stress that, the Portland webpage does have historical fish data and passage back to 1938.
Right.
That's where we should be getting all of our information.
Yeah, that's where I got my information, and that's where I got... The other thing, too, though, that it is difficult on that webpage to know what's out there. If you do a search, if you don't know what year was the November count, you know, then if you only go back a year, or sporadically, you may miss it. Because those counts have been done from 2003 to 7 and then in 12. So you'd have to hit one of those years to know that there are even any data in the November time slot. So I don't know if that's a problem, if there's a way that we can identify. I've been actually making up my own spreadsheets with historical data so I can have the 10-year running average in front of me. But,
that's a good point, Gary, indeed. I don't know, maybe there's something that we can do to put up when fish counts were done pre-2007, let's say.
Yeah,
when we started that 5-year period that you suggested in 2011 to go through.
Those are fine. I just didn't think maybe we weren't doing it. But we are. I see you guys have the schedule out there, and that's fine. So I'm not concerned about it, as long as we all feel that we have the data we need to make those decisions and those, you know, pre in water or post in water work period requests that we get. That's the biggest, you know, we're most looking at these counts seems to be at that time. But it is important to have those, those fall and spring counts. And folks who are writing up the MOCs recognize that they have them too.
Right.
Okay, are we done with that one?
Greg's going to go back and pound on Brad.
Yeah, I can pound on Brad. I did.
I think that possibly something needs to be in the fish in the course webpage, which everybody ought to be using. There needs to be something in there that identifies those years when there are data outside the normal April through end of October.
Mm-hmm. Good point. That's well received here. I'll see if that web page is available to do that stuff. From what I understand, these web pages are extremely tight.
Yeah, John Dielen is the guy.
Yeah, John worked through this before, and I'll ask him again.
Okay.
Well, I'll do it.
Thank you.
You bet.
Okay, the Dalles North fish count improvements. Bob or John?
Yeah, is John on the line?
Oh, hold on, let me
me quick grab him. I just stepped away. I'll get him. Hey, John.
Okay, well, we're waiting for John. This is Cordy. Now, we're still moving forward with doing this plan as we discussed at the last couple of comms. The only minor change that we might be looking at is possibly, at one time we were trying to figure out how during the count season when the fish counters work in and then during the off time during fish count period we would deploy the camera. But we're looking at the possibility of just deploying a camera during the off season, so we can then not have to worry about getting in the fish counter's way. And hopefully that'll give us enough information. So we're looking at that possibility right now. That's the only change from our last discussion that I'm aware of.
You don't want to talk about chartreuse?
Ron, we are still going to go forward with
Don't go with it.
Don't go with it at all.
No, just let's not. Oh, sorry.
Move
on.
Okay, we were just gonna go with the board with the chartreuse on one side of the gray on the other. Yeah, sorry, Paul. Well, if we don't want to go there, that's fine.
Put the notes from the last meeting.
Oh, did we say no chartreuse?
Oh, Bob.
Can't remember.
You're just working me. I'll let Trevor handle this one.
Okay, so my notes I had, we'll go with the neutral first.
Okay.
And then if that does not work with the video, then we will get crazy with the color and go with chartreuse and try it.
Okay. I think I'm going to have to make a visit to that count station sometime in the near future.
Is that what you recollect from the last meeting?
Yeah, whatever it says. I think we were going to try something more neutral and then see where we go from there.
Yeah, because the neutral might work fine.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping.
Yeah.
So, enough.
We'll do that then. John, did you have anything to add?
No. I think we're on track. I think we'll do fine.
He sounds positive.
Okay. Keep our fingers crossed, John, that you're on track. That sounds good. The next one would be McNary Stream Cleaning. Carl, are you still on?
Yes, yeah, here.
Yeah, you might want to mention that you were planning, if you were making a site visit, to bring some diagrams, and so I think Tammy was going to put those maybe up on the website for us. Those were sent out last night, so go ahead, Carl.
I don't know if people can view them there or not. I'm looking at them on my screen now. Basically, the issue is what do we do with the future of the transition screen brush. It's been problematic. I understand from Dave Coleman that it worked beautifully the first 10 years it was in existence, but it has not worked well since that time. And other than just testing with it, we haven't used it since I've been here or since before I even got here, which is, over 4 years ago now. Because every time we run it just for a little while, it inevitably fails. And the biggest problem with a failure is if it does fail in the wrong position, the rectangular screen brush could crash into it and destroy both brushes. And the rectangular screen brush is really critical for operation. I don't know if anybody has the diagrams in front of them or not, but the transition screen area is quite small compared to the size of the rectangular screen. I don't know the exact percentage, but it's something like 10% or less, I've heard. And just looking at it, that's probably pretty accurate. But the downstream one-third of it is pretty well covered with the existing bubbler system. We have four bubbler systems, basically three run across the rectangular screen, and the fourth one is kind of right between the rectangular screen and the transition screen, which is immediately downstream from the rectangular screen. And that does a pretty good job of cleaning off about half the transition screen. The rest of it's pretty small, so it's never caused a problem with us, so the bubbler system works good. Our reaction is that what we would prefer in the fish program here is just remove the darn thing, get rid of it before somebody tries to run it and screws up the other brush. And if we're not, we don't really believe anything needs to replace it. I guess if people were worried about it, they could expand the bubbler system so it covers the entire transition screen instead of just the upper one-third of it or half of it or whatever. But that's really kind of it in a nutshell. We have a meeting next Thursday with engineers at Juicer and whatnot to make a final decision as to what we're going to do with the transition screen brush. I don't know, is anybody able to view those pictures?
I'm not seeing anything. Where's that?
I think Tammy emailed me that she was sitting there, that she hadn't seen them yesterday when Carl... and so why don't we get them out and maybe have some further discussion again in December, Carl, after you've had some feedback then from engineering as well. I think it would be beneficial to be able to diagrammatically, whether it be plan view or whatever, have somebody that has some drawing skills put something together for people to understand how the current brush moves over the screens we have and why you believe that air would still be effective, and hopefully then you can get engineering endorsement to support that, because I think that's where we're at bringing this forward, is that we have project biological staff led by Carl that feels strongly there is a bigger process or project underway to evaluate a number of features in the juvenile collection channel that are not functioning properly. This is one of the items. All of the screen cleaners are listed as part of that. And at this point, this is a recommendation that Carl's made that he hasn't gotten some of the answers from engineering on, and so I think it would be prudent, since people don't have the drawings today, that we, even though this has been kicked down the road a couple times, and Carl made the effort here when he knew he wasn't coming yesterday to try to get him out, to have kind of a one-on-one in person with something other than, I mean, I think that the drawings are great because they give perspective, but people need to understand the mechanism as well here so that they can feel comfortable that with what's proposed and hopefully what becomes endorsed by engineering staff, that they understand what they're agreeing to.
And I guess my concern is I hear things about final decisions being made, and yet, you know, we haven't had a chance to actually review the alternatives or the process.
Right, and I think what I'm alluding to in terms of larger process is that before something like these types of changes could be made, is that there will be engineering kind of design review that would go through a normal process.
Okay.
So however, if Carl were to get the backing of engineering that there were no need for a transition screen brush and that the existing air was all he needed, then there would be no drawings put together. And I think that would be Carl's preference. I'm not sure Carl's going to get that agreement, and so I think that's why it's been a little unclear as he's brought this forward to FPOM.
There's still a decision that needs to be made there one way or the other. I mean, if that's what comes forward from engineering, I still think that the fish agencies deserve a chance to comment on that.
Sure.
It's
part of the facility. It's what you expect right now in terms of when you tell us to operate the facility as part of, it's a component of what we're doing.
Right, and not saying that we wouldn't disagree with at all with what you've come up with. I just am asking for a chance to look at it and have our engineers look at it as well. So
the drawings will help for your engineering review.
Yes.
I think he does owe, from a biological standpoint, and understandable, and I think he was going to try that once people had the drawings, but getting the drawings out in front this time, maybe you can get those to engineering for the review and come up with some further questions. And then I think he needs to come back. Hopefully he will have some more feedback. If it's positive that they support it, he will understand that he still needs to bring it to FPOM for support, and he'll be able to bring some of the information from his exchange with the engineering staff to support his recommendation. If you have further questions, then they'll need to be addressed. But I do think it's important that as we change features of an existing facility, that everyone understands what it is that's being suggested. So, you know, we don't need to call this settled until everybody feels comfortable that they do understand and whatever.
Yeah, I just think we need a chance to review it and how we're good or not. So, I think that's what O&M's about.
So the drawings, Tammy, I think you said you'd post those today.
Yeah,
I just resent those.
I just posted them, so it might take a little while before they show up on the website, like 5-10 minutes, but they're there.
Okay, so why don't, Carl, are you going to be around in December to do another showtime on this?
Yes.
Okay, great.
There's only about two or three of them that really show you the actual layout of the system. A couple of the drawings in this packet are just, minor details and stuff like that. But this will give you, your engineers, enough information to really take a really good look at the entire system. It's pretty thorough.
Okay, thanks, Carl.
Yeah. Now, Carl, when you dewater, can you also provide some pictures of the two brushes and the that you're talking about?
We can, yes. I just need to get down there with a camera and take some flash pictures, sure.
That might be helpful for those who haven't seen it and aren't familiar with it.
Right, and we might even be able to do a video of the thing running from underneath. We can try that anyway. We'll be interested to see.
Okay.
Well, we'll be expecting a nice dog and pony show in December then, Carl.
Right, no.
That sounds like a good path forward, Carl, because I think everybody will understand if you can show them.
I think we'll get a video of it.
Yeah.
We'll see what we can put together.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that's in with the decision-making schedule that Carl was talking about.
Right, yeah, part of what I'm thinking of here is that the project and the district probably should get their act together before we send it on to FPOM, but right now we don't need to have our act together.
Okay, a good point.
Yep, so I think we're into the fish passage plan change forms. So, we had dates when change forms were due. Little bit of discussion about the Appendix A change forms, and then a list. Not sure if people wanted to start working through the existing list. At the top of the list is Bonneville.
I think, well, okay, it would be nice if we could do this in person.
Okay, well, we can kick this off until...
See you guys. I still have hours, so...
Well, these are, I mean...
Those coming down horizontal, but it's still, power's still on.
I think we could wait till December to talk about them if people have time to review them. Otherwise, we will talk about each and every one of these in great detail in January.
Yeah, I mean, if we get into these, this is going to take all day.
Yeah, well, I'm fine. I think the last meeting I tried to go breeze over it and not do it, and people tried to slow me down, so I didn't want to do the same thing twice here. I think detailed discussion... if we need a rewrite prior to incorporation is really important. And I guess it's just a reminder that if there's anything else out there that people have been thinking of, that it would be good to get these formulated and submitted so that we can have some discussion before they actually get integrated into the document for the big document review, which is overwhelming.
And I'll just tell you, I've got, for the project that I'm responsible for, I've just about got my comments written up here, so I'll have that done today.
That'll be good. It's always good to get feedback. It helps.
I'll give you feedback right away on them. And then there's some additions I'd like to see. One of those was, I'm just going to raise this one. It's the only one I'll mention, is that I think I brought this up a month or two ago, that we need to have a change in the overview section regarding coordination of the MFRs, the Memorandum for Records. You know, those are put out, you know, you guys put those out, but there's really no subsequent discussion or review of those, and I think at least they need to have biological effects attached to those. So I think there's room for some improvement in our coordination process there. You can go back and look at the comments from, I don't know which month it was, but it was in the last 4 months.
It was the Bonneville meeting, so it was last month. We did have, and you're right, that was the meeting where it was a little hard. We had a lot of phone issues. We had some discussion of coordination forums and trying to clean that up so that it was meeting everybody's satisfaction.
I believe
for anything that was informal consultation.
And I see it in here as a potential. I didn't notice that. I was just looking in the on the webpage change forms, but I see that it is in here under 9.5.4. So maybe it's that's one that's up to me to write some more information and get it out on what I was expecting.
You know, we have kind of an MFR template, if you will.
Right.
And maybe it's as simple as just adding another section to the template.
Right.
So
okay.
I think what you're asking for is to make the MFR a little less of just a tell of circumstance.
Right.
But to please add, similar to an MOC, what potential this had for impacts, because
left the conference.
It is surveying at some extent. It goes on record, and it's kind of informal consultation of actions that may have been outside expectations.
Exactly. I'll add some words on this in my memo here that I'll get to you guys as soon as I can.
Okay. I think the other thing that I started working on last week that I was going to also add in change form for, you might remember, I think it was back in 2012, I had a change form making a suggestion that we consider whether or not, when we reached a certain fish minimum, whether it was really effective to continue truck transport. So I'm revising that, and I'm going to resubmit that for consideration.
Good, good.
So, and if anybody else has any other ideas, I think, you know, certainly now is the time to be trying to get stuff out. So, sounds like we'll plan on having time at the December meeting for this, and anything that's not resolved. You know, there is a number of these on here. There's at least probably four or five that are related to noise that we won't resolve at at the December meeting, but the rest, I think, if we can plan to have folks available just to brief it, what the intent is, it'll help people to formulate any additional comments early here so that maybe we can better address them before we get the draft FPP out.
Okay.
And while we're talking about the December meeting, Jenny had an email out saying we canceled the 18th, so have we...
I know it. I didn't want to call Tammy on it. She does such a good job with the notes. I think the way she went about that is interesting, is that she sent out a cancel for the 13th, but when you open it, she's actually putting together the 18th. And I think if you it basically says remove from calendar, so it's we need to resend the invite for December 18th.
All I did was change the date.
What?
I didn't realize Outlook did that. Sorry.
Okay, that's all right.
Okay, I have one other topic. I don't know if we're done here.
Go ahead. I got a quick question, Gary, before we change subjects.
Okay.
So we've got a meeting, FPOM meeting scheduled on the 18th. Are we going to have a special FPP meeting only, or is this when we're going to take care of it on the 18th?
No, the FPP meeting is in January.
January, okay. Thank you.
You'll miss that one, Dave.
No, maybe not.
The folks who were at SCT the last meeting, that is the SCT day, but I'm thinking that it was canceled. Is that true for December? I was having a lovely root canal that day, so it was, wasn't there.
I don't know. Tom, can you answer that, or?
We have SCT next Friday, and I don't know if we set the December meeting there or if that one got canceled or not. That's a great question for Bill.
Yeah. I think Bill told me it was going to be canceled, but that's not that. I don't know for sure, so.
That's what I saw in an email, that there was no SCT for December.
Okay, Charlie, thanks, and that means we're okay.
So, back to Charlie's or Dave's question, it's going to be an FPOM meeting. And then during the FPOM meeting, there'll be discussion of these proposed change forms. And it's a good opportunity if you have some issues with the way they're worded or want more information to try to get it before it gets integrated into the FPP document, which is reviewed in January. Just a little bit more time. Sometimes it's kind of hard in the larger document. Anyway, that's what we were, just to clarify where we were headed.
Good.
And then earlier today, we also talked about that, time permitting, we were going to kick off the noise subgroup, as well as we had the Dell split flow subgroup that we were going to try to follow up in the afternoon that morning meeting on the 18th. So it'll end up being a pretty much a full day, probably.
Yeah, well, there's another issue I want to put on that agenda today, and that's I know Ann, you and I are both working on the descaling issue for McNary that we saw with Sockeye this year.
Yep.
And I think probably as a result of the things that we're working on, we may have some things to talk about for, maybe not, but I think that needs to be on the agenda, because that's a PMT discussion.
Yeah, so bring it back to FPOM for further discussion in December. Is that what you're suggesting?
I'm thinking that that's the right thing to do, and then if we can see if there's any remedies or any solutions that we can try or whatever. But just put it on the schedule as a placeholder for now.
Okay. Anybody have anything else for today? So we're going to, unfortunately, since we're all on the phone, cancel the noise subgroup. So if you know anybody that was planning on calling in, please pass that along. And then we'll try to have that on the 18th. I think if nobody has any other comments, we're ready to close today.
I'm going to go fill out my coffee cup so I can drink the rest of my coffee.
Well, how are you today, Jared?
It's crazy up here right now.
Oh, it just snowing in the Gary just now.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
Howl in here.
With flakes
on horizontal.
Wow.
Yeah, it's not much wind, but yeah, just a few tiny flakes just started. It's about an hour late.
Huh.
And a whole flock of waxwings just landed in the tree next to me here.
Cool.
Ah, there you go.
Well, the window reported from Boise is a half inch snow on the ground.
Ah, you guys got snow too.
I feel sorry for the chuckers.
Has left the conference.
Okay, thanks everybody.
Has left the conference.
Thanks.
Has left the conference.